let you starve me.
Dr. Girard just wants you to lose a little weight.
Why? What do I need to lose weight for?
For your heart, Ethel.
My heart's just fine as long as my stomach's not empty. I want that tea!
What's the boogeyman?
You shouldn't have tried to go into Grandma's room, Rosalie.
Please don't hurt me, Ethel!
Hi, I'm Barbara Crampton from Chopping Mall, and you're listening to The Hysteria Continues.
Yeah, indeed you are. Welcome back to The Hysteria Continues, episode number 27. Can you believe we've done 27 episodes of this show? It's pretty amazing, if I do say so myself. We'll be up to the big 69 before fairly soon.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear. Sorry.
Here we go.
No, we are going to hold off the Double Entendres this show because we've had some feedback. I'm not going to say there will be no Double Entendres because sometimes, you know, things just pop into my mind and then pop out of my mouth, and I can't help that. You know, I was brought up in the 70s in Britain, and that's just what we do. So, but without further ado, I will welcome you to my crazy but not necessarily fat friends and start off with how you doing, Joseph.
I'm good, and I've heard that you should never come between Justin and a well-stocked wine cabinet.
That's quite true. That is very true, yes. Some people have tried, and they've not lived to tell the tale.
He wants that key.
I want that key. I do. I have that key. I don't want it. I've got it. And how are you doing, Eric?
I'm a bit sore.
And why is that, Eric?
Well, no, I hurt my back on New Year's Day, just as I was about to venture out to the sales. If there was sales on New Year's Day, I don't know.
I was
about to leave the house for the first time in 48 hours, and I snapped my back.
Ouch.
Oh, meow.
Have you... Ooh, what was that?
A sympathy meow from somebody.
Oh, it wasn't from this end. Not that I wouldn't be sympathetic, but it was... Was it straps?
Stripes.
Yeah, stripes. Oh, no, sorry.
Okay. And, well, we hope you feel better, Eric, and you make it through
the show.
Thank you. And how about you, Nathan? How are you doing?
I am doing okay. Okay. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. And we're doing Nathan's Choice or Choices this week. And we are going to be covering two films. You could loosely term as a cult classic, Criminally Insane from 1975, and its sequel come reimagining, not well, kind of rehash, I kind of guess, is Crazy Fat Ethel 2 from 1987. And they're your choices, aren't they, Nathan?
They are, and I am extremely proud of them.
Thank you. Well, it remains to be seen how proud we are of Nathan's choices, but we'll be coming to that shortly. We're also going to be talking about our favourite non-slasher 1990s horror, which should be quite fun, because I think we had a challenge, didn't we? Didn't we have a challenge about if we could come up with a top three list for non-slasher 90s?
We did, from our listener Brian Sammons.
Yes, mm-hmm. And we have, Brian, so you know, keep listening and we'll get onto that fairly shortly. Before we do, shall we talk about Recently Seen? We haven't recorded since before Christmas. I think our last episode was the Black Christmas episode, and hopefully you enjoyed our festive musings. And but even if you didn't, and you, well, I presume you did if you're still listening. But what were you listening to over the holidays, guys? How about you, Eric?
Listening to or watching?
Oh, watching, sorry. Yes.
Well, I watched loads. I'm just going to pick out two that I watched on Blu-ray. One was the classic early 80s Italian movie Alien 2 on Earth, a sort of pseudo-sequel in name only to Ridley Scott's film. It's kind of a cross between The Descent and Contamination. It's about a space mission that returns to Earth with some space rocks on board that actually turn out to be aliens, which kind of reminded me of Apollo 18, if you've seen that, the found footage movie from last year. Alien 2 on Earth is idiotic beyond belief. It's got these really, really shoddy, gory effects, very much in keeping with sort of early 80s Italian movies like Zombie Creeping Flesh and, you know, Zombie Holocaust, things like that. But the thing about it, and the most astonishing thing about it, is it's been given this amazing Blu-ray transfer by Midnight Legacy. It just looks absolutely stunning, crystal clear, as if it was made in 2011 on a big budget. You know, I'd love to see more films get that kind of treatment, even if they are as silly as Alien 2 on Earth. I mean, I can't imagine it sold very many copies. Have you seen it, Justin? I know you've seen the film. Have you seen the Blu-ray transfer?
I haven't seen the Blu-ray transfer yet. I'd like to. It's kind of a bit of a guilty pleasure. As a Lucio Cozzi, isn't it, who I met?
It's not. No, he did. Oh, he did. He did Contamination. He didn't Alien. Yeah.
Oh, I'm getting confused because Alien 2 was Contamination was also released as Alien 2, wasn't it?
Oh, I think you're right, actually. Yeah, it was released kind of as an Alien sequel somewhere anyway. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, no, I do. Yeah, sorry.
It's the one where they're underground in a cave
it.
And they come across alien rocks that spawn gooey monsters that make their heads explode and things.
Right. Okay. No, I've never seen it, actually. So I should do. I should do. Yeah, I did read about it, actually, but yeah, I've not seen it.
The other one I watched was the director's cut of Mimic, the Guillermo del Toro his debut in Hollywood, I think. It's the film about the giant mutated cockroaches that disguise themselves as humans, which sounds a bit ridiculous, but it's actually handled really, really well. It stars Mia Sorvino, who I love from one of my favorite films of the 90s, Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion. And in this, which was the same year, I think, 1997, she plays a hyper-intelligent scientist, and I find that kind of hard to swallow after watching Romy and Michelle 100 times. It's kind of hard to see her as the scientific type. This director's cut runs about 7 minutes longer, but it's been so long since I saw the film originally. I think it was when I was in the cinema was the last time I saw it, so I can't really tell what's new or what's changed, but I think it's, you know, pretty damn good monster movie. Not perfect, but very good, and again, on Blu-ray, looks stunning.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. Well, no, thank you, Eric. Well, it's good. Christmas is always a good time to catch up with a few things, isn't it? So,
well, I did have to buy Mimic myself because I didn't get any horror films for Christmas.
I only got one present for Christmas.
Present?
Well, actually, I didn't get any. No, I got an eyeball t-shirt.
Oh, cool. Where'd you get that?
Sorry? Well, it's a special. It was a kind of special commission. Sort of, it was just like the poster onto, you know, like a iron transfer type thing.
Beverly must buy that.
So yes, Beverly did buy that for me. And but the only trouble is, they bought me. She bought me an American medium, and as we know, an American medium is not the same as a British medium. An American medium is, I could probably set up the whole of Glastonbury inside this tent.
Even fit me.
Yeah, well, it might do. It probably fit Demis Roussos. I mean, it is pretty big. So I can, you know, have my own little gazebo, eyeball gazebo. So that's nice. But and the other thing I got from Secret Santa at Christmas was one of those food plates that had a face on it, which wasn't very exciting, really, because it's 12-year-old girl might like it, but I wasn't particularly happy when I got that. But I don't know which bastard got it for me because it's Secret Santa. But anyway, enough of that. Nathan, what have you been watching?
Let's see. I watched Anniversary at Shallow Creek, which I thought was very bland. I didn't really like it that much.
Is that a new film?
I think so. I watched it on Netflix. It's newer. Yeah, it's a newer film. It starts out pretty good, you know, with the whole idea of a sniper, like, watching this house, and these people got to be careful, this group of friends, because, you know, like, one false move in front of a window and they're dead. I liked that part of it, but then it kind of fell off the rails, and I found all the supposed twists in it to be obvious right from the get-go. So, yeah, I was not a huge fan of it. It's not so much a horror movie, but I watched Drop Dead Gorgeous recently because I love that movie. I've seen it like a billion times. I find it to be very, very funny.
Hello?
Yes?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
A dramatic pause.
Yeah, dramatic pause.
No, that was it.
Okay.
It's okay. Very, very funny.
Yes. Yes, well, I haven't seen that for a long time. That's got, what's the name in it?
Is it Kristen Dunst? Isn't that one?
Yep, she's in it. Kirstie Alley, Denise Richards.
Denise Richards, that's it. Yeah, she was in Valentine's, wasn't she?
God, all the hot chicks from the 90s.
Oh, yeah, and we'll be talking about 90s horror very soon as well. So, well, thank you, Nathan. How about you, Joseph? What have you been watching?
Well, I saw three in particular. The first was Storm Warning, the Jamie Blanks film.
Yeah.
It's basically, you know, Deliverance set on an island. I thought it was okay. I mean, it's really stylish and it's really gory. But my problem is that, you know, aside from the lead female character, who's like a complete badass, the husband character is like totally worthless. I mean, he refuses to fight back. He sits in the corner and just cowers the whole film. And then the characters, you know, end up doing really dumb things, like one of the hillbillies will have someone have their back turned, and they'll have the ample opportunity to strike back, and they'll just sit there and cower in fear. And then 5 seconds later, they'll set up this elaborate booby trap. I mean, so why couldn't you just, you know, hit them over the head with like a hammer instead of going through all this stuff, waiting for them to saunter off so you can set off this, you know, huge Rube Goldberg trap? You know, it's just kind of, it felt phony. I mean, the movie, you know, itself, it's like really well made, but I don't know. It's kind of a meh film for me.
Okay, anything else?
Yeah, I saw A Lonely Place to Die, which stars Melissa George from Triangle. I love Triangle, and it's a British thriller, and it starts out so wonderfully. These mountain climbers, you know, they climb this rock, and then they go hiking in the woods, and they happen upon this, they hear like this noise. And it turns out it's this little Serbian girl. She's been buried underground, and, you know, they dig her out. And they realize someone's, you know, holding her hostage for ransom, so they try to get her to safety. And we find out, like, you know, moments later that there's a sniper out in the woods, and he sees that they've rescued the girl, or they've seen that they've rescued the girl, whatever. And they start, you know, he starts shooting at them, and they have to, you know, run every which way but loose. And, you know, up until this point, I was like, wow, this is just so tense and so well shot. But then it takes a complete nosedive. I mean, it becomes like the Mel Gibson film Ransom, but then it gets so labyrinthine with so many different plot twists and so many different tangents that I honestly couldn't, you know, keep up with any of it. They start introducing all these like crooked cops and politicians and political and police conspiracies, and I was like, what is going on? This turned out, you know, this started out so well, and then it just tanks. I mean, I've never been so disappointed in a film because I was really looking forward to it. And, you know, like I said, that first 45 minutes, I was like on the edge of my seat, and I was like, wow, this is going to be one of the best films of the year. And then it just goes to shit completely.
Well, that sounds quite disappointing.
Yeah. And the last one I saw was Kill Theory, which I really, really, really liked. It's one of those After Dark films. It's basically a bunch of, actually this guy, he's sitting in a therapist's office, and it turns out he had went rock climbing with three of his friends, and there was like an accident, and he was forced to cut the rope, and it dropped all three of his friends, and that was the only way he could save himself. And he's been in a mental asylum, and the doctor is like, okay, you've made some progress, but what we want is closure. He's like, you know, I'm going to let you go ahead and go on the stipulation that, you know, you continue therapy for a year. And the guy who's being released, he's like, well, I made the choice I had to make, and I think anyone in their right mind would make the same choice to save their life. And the therapist is like, well, I don't agree with that, and he lets him go anyway. And a few months pass, these teenagers go to this house in the woods to party, and that guy shows up, and he like basically traps them in the house and, you know, gives them an ultimatum. They all have to kill one another, and only one is able to walk out and survive. And it's sort of like Saw in that way, but there's no torture and there's no elaborate booby traps. It's just him, you know, watching them to see what they'll do, to see if they will kill themselves. And, you know, it starts going off the rails because, you know, they eventually do start turning on one another because he's turning them against one another. And it's got a really, really, really effective twist at the end that I didn't see coming. But it's well acted and fairly gory for what it is. I mean, it's a pretty good movie. I would recommend it.
Okay. Well, that's
what was it called again, Joseph? It just
Kill Theory.
Kill Theory. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, it's that one of those After Dark. That. It makes you. It's one of those After Dark films to die for. From number four,
it
I
makes
believe.
Me, it makes me wonder though. Like, what if the four of us were on that rope? Could you guys cut the three of us loose?
I would
fall to our deaths. Well, thanks for like not even thinking about it.
I don't have to think about it.
Yeah, I would do, I would think about it, and then I would cut you three.
Cut me free. That's a good way of putting it.
I would think about it, and then I'd apologize, and then I'd just, you know, like, cut the rope.
Would you be See like ya. That guy in Don't Go Into the Woods when he stabs that person and he goes, I'm sorry.
Justin, you'd be okay if you wore your eyeball T-shirt. You could glide down safely using it as kind of a parachute.
Exactly, yes. Yeah.
Because it's an American medium.
But they used to say there was a, I don't know if it, I think it's probably a urban legend, but they said that in Bristol, the suspension bridge that Brunel built, it's a famous suicide spot. People have thrown themselves off for years. But they said one time a lady in a big Victorian dress jumped off, a hoop dress, and floated down safely to the bottom, possibly with her holding onto her parasol at the same time. I don't know.
Did a trumpet in the background go, wah, wah, wah?
Well, I'd be if I was the right frame of mind, and obviously I'm not because I'm sane, then I would potentially try and recreate that. But I don't think I think it probably is an urban legend. I doubt a hoop dress would.
Well, see, Justin, you're so skinny anyway, you'd float down like a leaf.
Well, no, I could try. Well, I'll try it, but I'm fighting the urge to make double entendres this time, so I will continue. I can't promise nothing will pop out. Okay, well, what have I seen recently? Well, I saw the other night, watched my new DVD. I don't think it's a newly released DVD, but I've just picked up. Is Hatchet for a Honeymoon, which is, or for The Honeymoon, I can't remember which one it is. The 1969 kind of giallo, come ghost story, kind of black comedy by Mario Bava. It's probably one of his least celebrated films, which is understandable because it's great, but it's not in the same league as Bay of Blood or some of his other more celebrated films. But if you've not seen it, it's kind of there's quite a lot of comparisons are made with American Psycho, because it stars a fashion designer or an owner of a fashion house, Stephen Forsyth, the Canadian actor, who says he knows he's mad and he finds it quite amusing. So he actually enjoys his madness as he goes around killing brides ahead of their wedding, which again is probably like a precursor to films like He Knows You're Alone. It's got lots of very, very kitschy, because it's 69, I think got released in 1970, and it's full of kitschy fashions, and it's got Dagmar Lassander, the very strangely monikered Czechoslovakian actress, who was also in Photos of a Lady Above Suspicion and several other films. So have any of you guys seen that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I have the DVD as well.
I like it a lot.
Yeah. I don't think it's funny. I like Mario Bava's films, but there's kind of quite a stately pace to them. I don't necessarily think he does. I think he does suspense really, really well in some films, but it was with this film, there wasn't really much suspense. I loved the fact that he bumps off his wife, who basically comes back as a ghost and haunts him throughout the rest of the film, and I thought that was quite clever. Not my favourite Mario Bava film. And the other film I saw finally caught up on pay-per-view was Final Destination 5, which I enjoyed.
What do you think about it?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I mean, the thing is, it's shame. The films are, they're shamelessly just retreads of each other, which is fine, because I mean that's essentially what most slasher sequels are, and that's not a problem with kind of small twists on the formula throughout. And I thought this was certainly better than the last one, and probably better than the third one as well. I didn't see it in 3D, so I don't know. I mean, obviously, it looked pretty good. I did love the twist. I thought the twist was very, very clever.
That was awesome. I love that.
Yeah.
Did you see the twist coming?
I didn't. I wasn't, the first four, there's no twist in the film. So, I wasn't, thinking, okay, should I look for something? I was just, going along.
I picked up on certain things during the film, but I didn't think that's where it was leading. I was like, why does that phone look so old? Why doesn't he have an iPhone? Why does that phone look like it's like from 1998 or something?
Yes. I did the same thing. I was like, why does he have such an old phone? But then I didn't pay any mind, because I was, oh, what's the next death scene going to be? But then, I guess we can spoil it now since we've all seen it. Big spoiler. When they showed that plane, and then they're like, what is that? And then you see the ruckus. I was like, I actually went, holy shit, out loud in the theater when Nathan and I saw it.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was really clever the way they put in that phone as a kind of a clue.
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, they did that a lot. Too.
Yeah, because he was looking at some checks or something as well that were backdated. And I was like, why are they dated?
Apparently, the massage coupon had an expiration date of 2000. And I'm not sure, because I don't live in New York, but apparently if you look closely, the license plates are like all old license plates on the cars.
Right. No, it's pretty
cool. And when the girl was doing the gymnastics, the little banners, but when she was talking to her boyfriend, had like 1990 something on them.
That's right.
Did you enjoy the gymnastics sequence, Justin?
Mm.
I thought was very good.
Yeah, no, it was great.
It just sets up so many things. You don't know where it's going to go, and then splash.
Yeah. You keep waiting for them to step on that little screw that fell out of the air conditioning unit, and I was like, somebody step on it already. It's driving me nuts. And then it didn't go that way.
But. Do you want to hear my? I suddenly thought of a sequel idea for Final Destination 6. And what I thought was interesting, because in the film, Tony Todd, who's obviously kind of the voice of death, or he's a character that's always in it, and in this he plays the kind of the mortuary attendant or whatever. But he says to them, and this is what kind of threw me off the track, I kind of guess. He said, this has happened before. And I was thinking, well, at the end of the film, you sort of you realise actually this is the first time in a series of films, if this is a kind of a prequel in front of the first film from 2000, that it hasn't happened before. But he said it has happened before. So I thought, how about if, because they're both, it's owned by New Line, isn't it? The Final Destination franchise.
Yes.
And so is the Friday the 13th franchise. So what I thought would be quite a cool idea would be for them to go back and do a kind of Friday the 13th meets Final Destination film set in the early to mid 80s with Jason. And so it sets it up with Jason killing a whole bunch of teenagers at camp. But then someone dreams that, stops it happening, and then they die in unusual ways throughout it, like a real retro thing. What do you reckon?
Yeah, sounds good. I'd pay good money to see that.
Cool idea.
Yeah,
I would see it. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Well, I just wonder if they were setting up for something like that, because he said it's happened before. And I was thinking, well, when did it happen before? Because we don't, you know, it only hints that it's happened before. So I don't know. But anyway,
I wonder if they're actually going to make a sixth one, because ironically, the fifth one did the worst box office of them all.
Oh, did it?
Yeah, it didn't do very well.
I think they still do great guns overseas as well, don't they? I mean, I can't remember what the... I mean, let me just have a look, actually, because I'll have a look to see what the box office is for that. But I think it was pretty healthy, I think, when you kind of look at the overseas numbers as well. I've got this site called thenumbers.com, which is kind of quite, especially for people like me who are a bit anal when it comes to sort of box office stuff. Edition 5, let's have a look.
It did get a huge publicity push over here. I mean, it was on the side of every bus and, you know, there's posters everywhere for it.
Yeah, well, it made 154 million worldwide.
That's good.
Oh, then they'll probably be a sequel then.
Yeah, I don't know what it cost to make it, but it was it kind of only made something like $42 million in the States, but overseas it made $112 million. So it's one of those films that just kind of does, you know, just does well, middlingly well across the board. So I reckon, considering the last one was The Final Destination, I reckon...
Well, I thought aside from the second one, I thought it was the best one from the second one. I still like the second one the best.
It's quite a consistent series, in fairness.
It is. Yeah.
It hasn't really, you know, nosedived in any installment.
No. But yeah, anyway, so I finally caught up on that. So I was glad to, although I didn't see it in 3D. I mean, did it work particularly well in 3D?
Yeah,
certain sequences did. I didn't think the 3D was as fantastic as in the fourth one. Mm. But the fourth one did the 3D better.
Right.
I thought the fifth one did the 3D better. I didn't particularly care for the 3D in the fourth one.
And the fourth one, I thought more stuff comes out of the screen, which is what I want with 3D. Whereas in five,
I was more looking at the scope of how, like, the
scope schmope. I want stuff sticking out of the screen.
Yeah, you do.
Well, talking of retro and going back in time, how about that for a cutaway to our top three?
Slick.
Very slick, wasn't it? Very slick, I think it was slick. It was... We're going to be talking about our top three 90s non-slasher movies. And, of course, these aren't the best necessarily, although we may think they are the best ourselves. But we took the challenge from Brian, and this is what we came up with. And what we're going to start with first is Nathan's number three pick. And this is we're going to play the trailers for each of these films. And this is the first one. And here we go.
They came just for the weekend.
You clean up the house real good for the new owners. I pick you up Monday morning and you each get $100.
But this weekend...
This house has a long history of mayhem and madness.
Just might last a lifetime. Because this house is not a home.
To live free.
Sure.
and the place is really coming to life.
Something funny's going on there.
He's got a taste for the good life.
Remember the drawing of the beast? It's gone.
And he's on a quest for flesh.
Maybe she's in trouble.
Every door leads to another dimension.
You stop with the freaking beast? This is reality.
Every step forward is a step backward.
I've come to destroy you.
And every room is a room with a view.
We're figuring that out.
There's no telling who will drop in.
This place is so spooky.
Or who will drop dead. David Carradine, Artie Johnson, and the girls. Evil Tunes.
You kids don't enjoy a good cartoon.
Evil Tunes. It's a scream.
Okay, Nathan, why did you choose Evil Tunes?
Because it's fantastic. It's a group of girls who are hired to clean up this this giant house, and they have this weird guy deliver a book to them. And the book's full of, like, pictures of demons and stuff. And the Brainiac just happens to know the ancient, you know, incantation language. So, you know, she reads it, and then one of the drawings comes to life as a cartoon and starts killing them off. I mean, how does it get any better than that? It's like Roger Rabbit, but a horror version.
I've never seen it. Never seen it.
I've never seen it either. Joseph, what's your assessment?
Oh, I like it. It's not as good as Terror Tunes, but it's pretty good.
Oh, please. Terror Tunes sucks.
That was a joke. That was a joke.
I don't think I've seen anything with tunes in the title.
No, actually, Evil Tunes is good. It's sort of like it's like what Cool World tried to be. It tried to be demented, but it failed, and it gets all the B formula right, and it has a lot of the B actors and actresses. It's got some pretty good, you know, animation for the budget, and it's really zippy and fun. I liked it a lot.
Okay,
I'd recommend it. Well, and I just want to stop you. You mentioned Roger Rabbit. Actually, I want to say that the end of Roger Rabbit, where the Judge Doom gets run over by the steamroller and he turns into the cartoon, that was actually scary.
How old were you when you saw that?
I don't remember. I was a teenager, maybe. I don't know. I still thought it was frightening.
God, what a girl. Okay. Anyway, thank you, Joseph. Hey. Nathan, anything else to say about Evil Tunes?
Just that it must be sought out and watched immediately.
Okay. Right. Well, thank you. Well, that was your Nathan's number three, and this is Joseph's number three.
One, zero, one, Bravo, Lima. Come in, over. I can't have you sitting in the middle of my runway. Respond, over.
Joseph, take it away.
Well, it doesn't tell you what the title is, but that is The Night Flyer, which I'm not going to spoil because I'm sure I know Eric has not seen it, and I don't know if Justin has seen it either.
No, I've not seen it.
You have seen it?
No, I haven't. No.
Okay, well, I won't spoil it, but basically it stars Miguel Ferrer as this really bastard of a reporter. He basically flies around in this little twin-engine Cessna around the country, you know, getting stories. And he's assigned to this one story about someone flying another Cessna around small airports, and he's killing people and draining them of their blood. And, you know, a lot of people are saying, oh, it's a vampire. And, you know, Miguel Ferrer's character, he's like an atheist, and he just doesn't believe in anything. And he's just, he's like, well, it's probably just some lunatic. So he's going around the country getting clues. And basically, you're not 100% certain if it really is a vampire or not, and you don't know until the very end of the film. But it's really effective. It's really moody and atmosphereic. And it doesn't really leave you guessing as to the identity of the person doing the killings. I mean, it's pretty obvious, especially if you've seen the box art on the VHS or the DVD release, which if you haven't even seen the film, I would recommend not even looking at that because it's a big spoiler. But I picked it as my number three because it's, it's gory. It's fun. It's, like I said, it's atmospheric. It's very well acted. The lead guy plays such an asshole. He plays an asshole really well. It has a really good climax to it. Lots of, you know, body parts getting chopped up. And it's based on a short story by Stephen King, I believe. And I guess that's it. It's a really good film. I think you both should watch it.
Hmm. Okay. No, it's one of those films that's kind of passed me by, I kind of guess. Kind of
yeah, me too. I think I was suffering from Stephen King overload at the time, so I kind of skipped it.
Yeah, I'm not a huge Stephen King fan, but it's a really good short story, and it's actually a really well-made film. I believe it was made for HBO back when it came out, or it went straight to HBO or one of those cable channels, but it's really underrated. I mean, I really love it. I mean, I think you both would like it a lot, too.
Okay, cool. How about you, Nathan? I presume you've seen it.
I liked it a lot when I saw it, but, you know, it's one of those that it's been so long that I can't remember it. I think it needs to be a Friday night watch, Josef.
Yeah, I think Greg would enjoy that one.
Cool.
If he got to hear it.
Yeah, if he can hear it.
Right, okay, fair enough. Okay, well, thank you, Joseph. Eric, and here's your number three.
What the hell is going on?
Does anybody remember how they got here?
Why would they throw innocent people in here? Are we being punished?
Once you're inside the cube...
We need to get around the trap.
They're identified by prime numbers.
Figure it out.
I can't!
I'm not dying in a rat maze!
The only way out...
I just want to wake up.
You gotta save yourselves from yourselves.
...lies within your mind. Cube, rated R.
Okay, Eric, why do you choose Cube as your...
Okay, well, before I mention that, when Brian Sammons challenged us to find a top three from the 90s, he said, I'd love to see what you'd come up with for a dozen non-slasher horror films that were actually good during the deadbeat decade. And I sort of laughed it off saying, there's loads from the 90s that I liked. But then when I sort of delved into it, I actually did quite kind of struggle. Now, the three I found, I do really like. But if I was going to find a top five or more, I probably would have struggled really badly. And I also mentioned that the noughties were probably a worse decade than the 90s. And I take that back completely because when I had time to think about it, I realized how completely wrong I was. So I just want to apologize to everyone and apologize for any hurt I might have caused people. Anyway, on to Cube. From 1997, this was a film that I only knew the very, very basic premise of when I went to see it in the cinema when it came out in 97. I was completely floored. It has the best opening sequence of any film I think I've ever seen. You've got the character who wakes up in a cubed room. He sees there's hatches in every surface, every wall. He walks through another room. They're all identical, except maybe slightly different patterns on the wall. That's all. And then to his... unfortunately for him, he discovers that some of them are booby-trapped. You hear this sort of swish noise, and you don't really realize what's happened for a few seconds. Then you see lines of blood in sort of symmetrical cuts forming all around his body, and he falls to pieces because he's just been diced by this huge big metal mesh. And then the opening credits come up. So what the rest of the film is a group of people trapped in the cube, no idea how they ended up there, and they have to use basic human survival skills and intellectual skills to try and work out how to get out of the cube. It's really interesting. It's very, very Twilight Zone-ish. I know that Joseph is a big fan, and he's kind of regretting he didn't think of it for his top three, but I think it's probably more of a science fiction film, really, than horror. Once the traps sort of are left to the wayside after maybe the first half of the film, and then it's much more of a sci-fi thing. It reminded me kind of, Saw seems to be slightly influenced by it, because Saw is people walking into various rooms where there's traps, which is kind of similar to what Cube is. Cube does it in a much more intelligent way, in my opinion, although it's slightly let down by a couple of the characters are quite annoying, and a couple of the performances by the actors are quite iffy, to say the least. That middle-aged woman you heard in the trailer there going, "What are we doing here? Are we being punished?" She's really, really bad. And every time she's on the screen, she drags the film down. I thought, thankfully, she disappears midway through. But yeah, that's my number three. It's Cube. Vincenzo Natali, is that his name? His debut film?
That's him, yeah.
Canadian.
Yeah, I just want to add on to that. I actually was going to pick Cube as my number one, but like you said, I completely forgot, because it is more of a science fiction film. And when I was doing research for horror, I was actually looking at a list of horror films, and Cube wasn't on there, so it completely went over my head. But then when you picked it, I was like, damn it, I wanted that as my number one, but oh well. Would have been my number one, but it's not.
Although, yeah, I do feel a bit of a cheat, because it is more sci-fi. I mean, there's a couple of horror sequences. One guy gets his face sprayed with acid. That guy gets diced at the start. But then really, apart from that, it is definitely more sci-fi.
I think it has influenced a lot of horror films, isn't it? Like you saw, but also films like the Resident Evil films.
Particularly the first
House of Nine as well.
Yeah, and also there was, what was that? I'm trying to remember the, what's the film? It's not Knossos. It's something like that. It was kind of like
Colobus. Colobus.
That was it.
Yeah.
And there was quite a few films around that kind of time. Was it Jennifer's House? I think it was another one. Or
My Little Eye, kind of,
yeah,
maybe.
That kind of thing, which is kind of precursor to the whole torture porn thing. Mm. So I think Cube actually doesn't really get the props for actually, kind of initiating, rightly or wrongly. I mean, it's a good thing or a bad thing, depending on how you see it, this kind of whole sub-genre. And of course, I don't think I've seen any of the sequels, so I don't know if they're worth catching or not.
No, the second one's not bad, but the third one is really awful.
Okay. I don't remember the third one being awful, but they definitely aren't a patch on the first one.
Cool. Okay.
Just recommend, if you like Cube, to go back and watch the Twilight Zone episode, Five Characters in Search of an Exit, which is very similar, with five characters in this like cylinder, but they're all different. One of them's a clown, one of them's like an army guy, one of them's like a hobo, and they don't know why they're in this thing.
Is that from the 80s Twilight Zone or the 50s?
No, it's from the original, the 50s and the 60s. Oh, yeah. It's very Cube-esque. If you like Cube and you haven't seen that episode, I really recommend it. It's got a really neat twist at the end of it.
Mm. Well, that's great. I mean, just interjecting, another film I saw the other day is one of my favorite 80s films, non-horror 80s films, is Miracle Mile, which the reason that it kind of jogged my memory was the fact is that was originally supposed to be a Twilight Zone episode, or going to be for part of the film. Have any of you seen that film, Miracle Mile?
I have, yeah.
Oh, I love Miracle Mile. It's fantastic.
It's brilliant, isn't it? I just watched it again recently, and it's one of my favourite films from the 80s, and it's one of those films I heard other podcasts cover it recently and say how much they hated it, and I couldn't really understand anyone hating Miracle Mile, but
I remember the mainstream press slating it when it came out, and it was in 1989. Yes, I remember the mainstream press weren't impressed with it at all.
Poor Anthony Edwards. I mean, there's so many obstacles in that movie. All he wants to do is get with that girl, and there's so many things happen.
Despite
it's just like,
hairdo.
Just
yes.
Don't spoil it for me.
Oh, you're not seeing it?
No.
Ah, yeah. You've got to watch it. We won't tell you what. Watch it before the next episode, and we'll have a chat about it then with your recently seen, because it is a fantastic film. I won't say what happens in it. Go into it blind, because it's all I can say. It's a bit like Audition in that way. It starts one way and ends another. So, but anyway, here's my number three.
When you violate the laws of nature,
let's proceed.
There's one question you should ask yourself.
Phase one complete, sir.
How do you kill something that's already dead?
Okay, and that was Return of the Living Dead Part 3. The reason I chosen this was that when I saw it originally, and I've seen it subsequently, but when I first saw it, I saw the original Return of the Living Dead, which is obviously a classic, and I saw the sequel, and I've spoken about this before, saw the sequel at the cinema and thought it was awful. I think if I saw it again now, I'd probably quite enjoy the sequel, the first sequel, because it was, you know, I remember the Michael Jackson zombie dancing, all this kind of thing. I just remember thinking that they took the kind of the fun and comedy of the first film and just made it into a really broad, kind of scary movie almost type crap. But Return of the Living Dead went completely the opposite direction, and it was kind of like a kind of horror Romeo and Juliet. And it's kind of typical, I kind of guess, of like Brian Yunzer, of a kind of slightly twisted version of these kind of films, very fun as well. So it kind of satisfies as probably, you know, it's kind of one of the best kind of, I mean, it's got lots of fantastical elements, I mean, obviously for a zombie movie, but it's also very kind of downbeat, you know, it explores sadomasochism and self-injury. You know, it's got one of the Juliet character in it who becomes one of the living dead can only stop the desire to eat human flesh by harming herself, and she kind of basically mutilates herself into this kind of bizarre fetishist kind of S&M look. I just thought it was a real surprise, and it kind of really stands up again. Even now, I still think it's a decent film. How about you guys?
I love it. I met Mindy Clark. She's so wonderful. I love her too.
Yeah.
I love her.
She is very, very nice and friendly. She took a picture with me.
Did she? Because I heard rumors, and these are rumors in case any lawyers are listening, that she was a bit of a nightmare back then. But maybe she's kind of different now, perhaps. I don't know. But she's very good in this film. How about you, Eric? Have you seen it?
I have, yeah. Yeah, I do like it. Unlike you, I did enjoy the sequel, the first sequel, when I saw it in the cinema. No? Am I the only one?
No, I love yes. it.
I thought it was quite good. I wouldn't say I love it, but I did enjoy it. I don't know, did Part 3 get a theatrical release in the UK? Because it went straight to video here.
I don't think it did, no.
Yeah.
Not as
yeah.
right.
It went straight to video here as well.
Right, oh, did it? Okay. All right.
Yeah,
so that's why it's a bit of a lost kind of classic as far as I'm
it
concerned.
It is, yeah. It's got quite, yeah. Did Screaming Mad George do the effects in that? Because it has some outlandish
he
stuff.
Did.
Yeah.
It did, yeah. So, yeah. But if you haven't seen it, check it out. I think for my following ones, they're going to get a little bit more, even more downbeat. But before we get to that, we have... Do you know what's coming next?
I do.
It's a kind of slightly garbled flushing a toilet, so I don't know what went wrong there, but
something happened.
Nathan, here's your number two.
You could never have created such a wondrous, loving creature as Misery Chastain.
Very kind.
The presumption must now be that Paul Sheldon is dead.
You dirty bird. How could you? Misery Chastain cannot be dead.
Misery Spirit is still alive.
I don't want her spirit! I want her! And you murdered her!
You don't think he's dead, do you?
And don't even think about anybody coming for you, because I never called them. Nobody knows you're here. And you better hope nothing happens to me. Because if I die, you die. I know you've been out. Is this what you're looking for? Eventually, you'll come to accept the idea of being here.
Annie, whatever you think I'm not doing, please don't do it. Annie, for God's...
Shh, darling. Trust me.
God's sake.
It's for the best. God, I love you.
Okay, Nathan, tell us about your misery.
Oh, Misery. I love this movie. I think most of our listeners should know about this movie. I mean, you know, it's, you know, a writer of these famous romance novels featuring a character named Misery Chastain gets into a car accident. He's rescued by his supposed number one fan, who actually turns out to be this psychotic, obsessed, you know, like stalker type fan who, you know, pretty much forces him to write a book the way she wants it. It's really good, and, you know, the acting is incredible, and I think Kathy Bates is just fantastic. I mean, this performance of Annie Wilkes could easily be one where somebody could have gone over the top with it, but she plays it so well without getting campy, and I think she did an excellent job, and, you know, there's just a lot of scenes, and of course it builds up to the hobbling scene, which... You know, it still makes me cringe just now even thinking about it. You know, it's an excellent film. I'm sure you guys have seen it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. Yes, definitely.
Well, I was intrigued by there and the trailer was that it's quite a low-key horror film, but they've used the Aliens music to make it sound more action-packed than it actually is.
Oh, really?
No, it's not very action-oriented.
That's the music from Aliens, yeah, okay. And they've used on the trailer.
Yeah.
I mean, you got a movie with James Caan, who's one of the greatest actors. I mean, how do you top that? You get Kathy Bates to play a complete psycho, and she's so good. I mean, she won the Oscar for that role, didn't she?
I think so, yeah.
She's so good in that film. I mean, you hate her. You just want to, like, strangle her and say, let him go. Leave him alone. Mm. And, yeah, it's one of those, you know, nail biters, and you just can't look away. It's a fantastic film.
Yeah, I watched it again about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it still stands up really, really well. I think it's kind of it's probably one of the best Stephen King adaptations that
done,
really, isn't it? So, yeah, great. Excellent. Well, thank you, Nathan, for your number two. Joseph, do you want a little bit of the... He's a cat, flushing the toilet, he's a cat, flushing the toilet, he's a cat, flushing the toilet, he's a cat. Oh, it's a lot smoother that time.
Yes.
Yeah, well, it doesn't matter if I did or did not want it. You played it anyway, but I always want it.
Exactly. Pretending you don't want it. We know you want it.
From Kevin Williamson, the writer of Scream and Scream 2, and Robert Rodriguez, the director of Desperado, and From Dusk Till Dawn, comes the new science fiction thriller.
No more pencils, no more books. No more teachers' dirty looks.
The students at Harrington High have always suspected their teachers were from another planet.
Is this going to be on the test?
This is the test.
This time, they're right. Now, these six students won't just question authority. They'll have to destroy it. Faculty,
please report to the principal's office.
Okay, Joseph, take it away.
Oh, I love the Faculty. I mean, it's a complete, you know, riff on The Thing and all those science fiction films about what if my teacher is an alien. And I think one of the reasons I like it so much is because it reminds me of a book I read. It's one of those... teen novels where students are trapped in the school and their teacher really is an alien and he starts killing them one by one. But anyway, no, I mean, I actually like this one probably more than Scream. I mean, it's so fun. I mean, you got a cast of likable characters, you know, they have a central threat, which is that their teachers are aliens, and they start assimilating the rest of the faculty and all of the students, and it's only these few teens realize what's going on, so they're having to jump through hoops to kind of figure out how to stop the threat. And it has that one scene where it's basically a riff on the thing where they all take some kind of concoction that the Josh Hartnett character's some kind of drug he sells. And basically, if they start, you know, tweaking out in a specific manner, they'll know that this person's the alien, which is a complete, you know, ripoff of the thing. But it's done, you know, with a wink. I liked it. And I don't know. It's just a really fun movie. I mean, I guess if I had to be a little picky, I'm not too fond of the soundtrack. I mean, I don't really get into the whole 90s kind of grunge rock thing. But other than that, it's one of the movies I saw at a theater by myself. And I walked out. I was like, wow, I had so much fun with that. I want to go see it again. And I recommend it highly.
Cool. Okay. Mm. How about you, Nathan? Presumably you've seen it.
Oh, yes. I love The Faculty. It's very, very entertaining. And I like that they do the whole, like, Breakfast Club type thing with the teenagers because, you know, of course, every teenager is your typical, like, stereotype, you know, the goth girl, the popular bitchy girl, you know, the nerd, the jock, you know, the stoner. I mean, it's funny how they, like, kind of throw all them together when that happens. And also I find it funny, Joe, that you say the only thing you didn't like is the soundtrack when last night Scott said that the best thing was the soundtrack.
Well, Scott's an idiot.
How about you, Eric?
Yeah, I love The Faculty. I haven't seen it now for 12 years. I saw it twice in the cinema and haven't seen it since. But the first time I went, it was a packed audience. It was much like the experience I had with Scream 2. Everyone was into the film, you know, laughing at the right moments and jumping at the right moments. It was really terrific, incredibly entertaining. And like Joseph said, I prefer it to Scream. Any of the Scream films, I prefer it to.
Really? Okay.
Controversial, yes.
Controversial, yes. Well, I haven't seen it for a long time, so I remember enjoying it. I mean, that's all I can say about it, really, because I haven't seen it for so long. But, well, thank you very much, Joseph. And Eric, do you want the...
Do you need to ask?
He's a cat. Flush in the toilet, 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 he's a cat.
Oh, I've got a different one. That's a different cat flushing toilet there. But, interesting. Anyway, here we go.
Here, in a world where the sun burns gold, and the wind blows colder, a visitor has come. But not by herself.
It started.
Ah! Come on!
The suspense is back.
And we have no weapons of any kind?
The fear is back.
Ah! Don't look back, dude! Run as fast as you can!
And most of all, the bitch is back. Alien 3.
Okay, Eric.
Yeah, that's the bitch is back. That's the promo for Susie when she released her solo album. Okay, that's the now customary appearance of the maligned sequel in my top three. It seems to be happening every week now. But, you know, I'd agree with most folk that Alien 3 was hugely flawed in its theatrical version. I remember being really disappointed in it when I saw it in the cinema. But in the director's cut, which was issued in the DVD quadrilogy about 7 or 8 years ago, it's a much improved film. You know, it's relentlessly grim from the off because it kills off Newt and Hicks, which were the characters everyone was rooting for in Aliens, and you know, they're just offed without, you know, any mention or any care, really. Ripley's the sole survivor, well, apart from a stowaway facehugger from the previous film, she lands on a lice-infested planet, prison planet. Because it's lice-infested, she has to shave her head, and because it's a prison planet, the only clothes she has to wear are prison uniform. And that's it's probably the biggest problem with Alien 3, is that everyone looks the same. It can be incredibly hard to follow, especially if you're watching it for the first time. All the characters look the same. They all have British accents. They all have shaved heads. They all wear sort of khaki green t-shirts and sweatpants. So that was, for me, certainly when I was watching it in the cinema, the biggest problem was that I just couldn't keep up with who was who, who had just been killed, who hadn't just been killed. The director's cut fleshes out the characters much more, making them easier to distinguish, and it allows you to invest more in their fate. I think it's a hugely improved cut of the film. There's some new effect sequences as well. The alien this time spawns from an ox in the director's cut rather than a dog in the theatrical version, and it's a much more dramatic sequence, in my opinion. This is, of course, David Fincher's controversial debut film. Studio interference has led him to sort of disown the project to a degree, and he's gone on to prove that they probably would have been best to leave him to his own devices rather than interfere. He delivers some great set pieces, particularly the moment where Ripley comes face to face with the alien. That's the scene that's used in most of the promotional materials. It was used on certain posters for it as well. It's absolutely stunning, and you don't really know until three quarters of the way through the film why the alien gets so close to Ripley but doesn't kill her. And I think that twist three quarters of the way through is absolutely spectacular, and leads to, you know, a really, really somber and quite sad ending. The alien in the film, while the effects at times are a bit cheesy, looking back, I think the alien is really good. The way it moves so fast, and it's really vicious. It's like a cheetah. So, you know, I don't rate it as highly as the first two films in the series, but I think it was a fine end to what was my favorite trilogy up until 1997's Turkey Alien Resurrection, which, you know, oddly enough, I really, really liked when I saw it in the cinema, but now I really can't stand it, and I actually prefer Alien versus Predator to it, which is, you know, quite a severe thing to say about a film. But yeah, my number two is Alien 3 in its director's cut.
Okay, well, that's an interesting choice.
Why do you not agree?
No, I enjoyed it when I saw it at the cinema, and I agree the director's cut is probably a lot better. But I remember, actually, I think it was the one I saw at the cinema, and it's got the chases down the corridor, isn't it? And that,
yes,
that worked really, really well at the cinema. It's almost like I'm old enough to remember those things at the fairground where you walked into and they had like a dome shaped tent where they shot like kind of like a point of view shot of a car going down the streets of San Francisco or something like that. And then when the car stopped, everyone fell over. Do you remember those?
Probably no.
Going back, some of our older listeners might remember those, but essentially they were kind of like almost like a 3D immersion type thing. And that's what I remember about this film, was that kind of in a big screen, all those kind of shots chasing down the corridor. It was kind of almost gave you that kind of feel of being on a roller coaster. And I remember it being pretty good. How about you two? How about you, Nathan?
I haven't seen it.
Haven't you seen it? Okay.
Yeah. No, I don't even know if I've seen Aliens, the second one.
Joking.
I've seen the first one, but like it didn't leave a huge impression on me. But I mean,
my God,
Gas Central today.
It's not because it's a bad movie. I'm just not into sci-fi. Sci-fi just does not interest me.
Oh, I feel a Ned Flanders-style faint coming on.
No, wait a minute. I thought you said you enjoyed Alien, the first one.
Well, I mean, I liked it because it was more of a slasher-esque kind of thing. You know, they're trapped on the spaceship and they get killed off one by one by the alien. I liked it, but it's not one that I could revisit, like, say, a Friday the 13th sequel. And I don't remember Aliens except for that line about, you know, get away from her, you bitch. I think that's the only thing I remember about the second one.
Controversial. How about you, Joseph?
Here's controversy. I love the first Alien. But I think the Alien 3 director's cut is actually better than Aliens. I think Aliens is very overrated. But, you know, like Eric, I think Alien 3, the director's cut, it's criminally underrated. Mm. It's a lot of fun. I think the effects were really good. I love the setting. I love the whole prison planet setting. I love all the quirky characters. I mean, I don't know. It just really gelled with me. I mean, I would really recommend the director's cut, not the cinematic cut. The director's cut.
Yeah, well, there's certain sequences, I think, of the alien, on, like when he's on the ceiling, And it looks, the lighting is considerably different to the ambient lighting in the scene, and it looks really, really cheesy, I think.
Well, but, did you watch it on Blu-ray or anything? Because I haven't seen it in a while, but...
Yeah.
Okay.
On Blu-ray...
Maybe if I watched it again, I would pick up on the effect.
Aliens, James Cameron's first sequel, it's really unforgiving on Blu-ray. The cheapness of some of the spaceship effects particularly are quite startling on Blu-ray, I found.
Yeah, well, I find that film to be overrated. I'm not a big James Cameron fan. For my money, Terminator, the first one, was the best thing he ever did.
Okay, well, no, well, thank you. So, controversy here on the Hysteria continues. And if you have your own opinion, write in and tell us, and we'll give you the email address a little bit later. But I'm going to go for my number two now. So I'm not even going to do a full cat, just going to do a flush.
Just the flush.
Okay, well, it doesn't give much away, but if you know the film, you might recognise the the music. That was from Ringu, which was the 1998 Japanese horror film by Hideo Nakata, which of course gave birth to the extremely lucrative and popular Ring franchise in the States, which apparently is going to be going on to Ring 3D quite soon. But Ringu, I remember, I'm sure most people listening to this will know the story of this, which is obviously the killer videotape and the curse that's passed on through the videotape. And if you play the film, the video, then you will get a phone call and then you will die within 24 hours or 48 hours, wherever it is. And of course, the standout scene in this is Sadako, who I think she's called something else in the remake, but... the cursed girl, or the girl who spreads the curse, coming out of the TV screen. And now, in the same way, this film probably works, it works well at the cinema, but in the same way as a film like, I was trying to think of other films that work better in the home, as opposed to, say, well, for instance, the Blair Witch Project or something like that, where it's shot on video, it has a more immediate effect, I think, watching it home alone on you know, on TV. And obviously back in 1998 or 1999 when I first saw it, it had that effect, because way back then, not before the internet, but certainly before the internet became what it is now, and certainly there's no idea that you could download movies off the internet back then or anything like that, that the way that you got to see films that were not released in this country was on bootleg VHS. And that's how I saw Ring. I can't remember. Somebody sent me a copy of it on videotape. And I remember watching it and it being as scary as people suggested it was. And of course, there was no hype to it then. And so I remember watching it on an nth generation videotape. And of course, for me, that was the way to watch it, because what it really did was have that kind of... immediacy, and like the you know, just basically it was kind of a slightly dodgy video copy of a film about dodgy video copies killing people. And of course I didn't expect anything to come out of the TV screen, but it certainly had that resonance. And yeah, that's my number two. And I guess you guys have probably seen this, have you, Eric?
Yes, I have you to thank, actually, Justin, because you actually controversially sent me a copy of that film back in about 2000 or 1999 or so.
Right.
That's okay. Because, like you, I had no way of seeing it because it hadn't been officially released here yet. But in fairness now, I did go and buy the DVD, DVD, when it came out.
Yeah.
I do like it very much. Really, really creepy and ambient, and atmospheric is the word I was looking for. Yeah, I'd say that scene where Sadako comes out of the television, you know, is certainly one of the scariest films. I think Ju-on outdoes it in the scare department, personally,
Yeah,
even though it has a maybe a flimsier plot. Mm. But I was into J-horror for a long time there, and certainly Ring and Ju-on were my two favourites.
Okay. Well, I was going to ask you if you enjoyed Ring. And
I do enjoy Ring, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, and how about you, Joseph? Do you enjoy Ring?
Yeah, I like Ring. I don't like the American version. I like the Japanese version. It might be a little overrated because when I saw it, it had a lot of hype around it, unlike you. So I was expecting the moon, but I don't know. I didn't get the full effect if I saw it without, knowing anything about it. But yeah, it's fairly good. I mean, for what it is, it's probably a little dated now. I mean, but I enjoyed it. But as an aside, you were talking about you sent a copy to Eric. The baby Jesus was alive and well way back then, because I remember it was at 98 or 99. I sent you the Blair Witch Project.
Oh, was it you? What, on video?
Yeah, yeah. Because okay. you sent me a Manhattan Baby poster and a Demons poster in return.
Okay. All right. Yeah, no, we might come on to that film shortly. How about you, Nathan? Did you expect the moon when you saw Ring?
I really loved The Ring. I did not expect the moon. I expected a good movie, and it was a good movie.
Okay, well, I think we'll wrap up our number twos there. It's all. I should be. My finger is hovering. As you can imagine,
I know you have to resist.
I have to resist.
When Joseph said he wasn't expecting the moon from The Ring, I just, had to control myself.
Got to do it at least once. Come on.
I don't get it.
You don't get it.
What's the double entendre there?
Ring is a UK slang term for somebody's bottom.
Oh. Okay.
Okay.
Like, I get it.
You heard him say, "I blew out my O-ring."
I've never heard that before.
No. Well, I'm going to do it anyway.
Oh, Nathan, no, please. Oh, your hand.
And I just don't
care. And if you don't like it, we don't care.
Okay, yeah, so, Nathan, here's your big number one.
Thank you.
Universal Pictures is proud to present the motion picture directing debut of one of America's most talented and respected artists.
Cut! Cut, 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 cut!
Oh, hello, kiddies. So glad you could join me. Your pal, the Crypt Keeper, has gone Hollywood in a big way. I'm directing my first feature film. Care for a little shriek preview? For my big Scream premiere, I wanted lots of suspense.
Uh-oh.
Special effects. Sex.
Yeah.
Violence. The kind of thing you could really sink your teeth into.
Hi!
Frights! Camera! Action! It's about a chase through the ages. A race against time. The war between good and evil.
Come on out, everybody! It's time to play!
And the final battle between man...
I'm sorry.
...and demon.
I'm not gonna hurt you. I lied.
It stars Billy Zane from Dead Calm, William Sadler from Die Hard 2, and Jada Pinkett from Menace to Society. Ooh, I love those titles. And you'll love Demon Knight.
They're here! The demons are here!
And ladies, if you think Demon Knight is too gross and yucky...
Whoa!
Thank you!
Okay, Nathan, why is that your number one?
I love Tales from the Crypt, and I love Demon Knight. I think it may be my number one because it, even though it's not a slasher, it's still got some of the, it's still kind of, could be in the slasher realm just from the idea of, a group of people trapped in this, secluded, hotel getting picked off one by one by these demons outside. And it's just really entertaining. I love all the characters in it. I love Billy Zane, and he's so sexy in this movie, with his, cool demeanor, even though he's, a crazy, psychotic, guy from hell. And, you know, I love his little speech outside when he wants them to give him the key. You know, overall, yeah. Very good movie.
You fucking ho-dunk, po-dunk, well in there, motherfucker!
Has he got his syrup of figs on in this one? His wig?
No, he's bald. He's completely bald.
Oh, is he?
He's
no, because he had a wig in Titanic.
No, he was bald in this one.
Okay.
Because that's his signature look, is being bald.
Right, okay. I've not seen this film, so I know. Well, I feel slightly ashamed of not seeing it when Nathan hasn't seen Aliens, but
yeah.
But I have to catch
this
up
one's
on it.
Better than Aliens.
Is it?
I don't know.
Fair enough.
Is that the one with Corey Feldman in it, or was that the second?
No, that's film? Bordello of Blood.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And it's terrible.
But it's got Corey Feldman in it.
Yeah, that's why it's terrible. No, actually, he's pretty good. I haven't seen Bordello of Blood in so long. I need to watch it again. But I remember, you know, comparing it to Demon Knight, being like, "Wow, that was a step down."
Okay. Anything else you want to say about Nathan?
No, thank you.
Oh, okay. Well, no, thank you very much. You always sound so sad. But you'll be coming on to Criminally Insane soon. But who's having a coffee fit?
Sorry, I kind of got a cold.
You got a cold?
Yeah, I got a cold.
Okay, sorry. Right. Hopefully this will cheer you up, not cheer you up, but make you cold. I don't know what I'm talking about. Anyway, here's Joseph's number one.
Everybody be cool. You be cool. Somewhere in the middle of nowhere.
Low profile. You understand the meaning of the words? Low profile?
Sure. Two of America's most dangerous criminals have taken hostages.
What is this? It's called a punch. I'm going to ask you one question, and all I want is a yes or no answer. Do you want to live through this? Yes.
Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
One night is all that stands between them and freedom.
This is my kind of place.
But it's going to be one hell of a night.
We might be in trouble. There are a bunch of fucking vampires out there trying to get in here and suck our fucking blood.
Now, their only chance is to fight back. George Clooney, Quentin Tarantino, Juliette Lewis.
Welcome to slavery.
No thanks. I already had a wife.
From dusk till dawn.
Okay, Joseph, take it away.
Well, I was lucky enough to be one of the only people in the world to have watched From Dusk Till Dawn, not knowing that halfway through it becomes a vampire film. All I knew was that it was another Quentin Tarantino. He had written it, and I thought, okay, it'll be like Reservoir Dogs or Pulp Fiction. And I believe my brother or my mother had rented it, so I was sitting and watching it. And you know, the first half, I was like, this is kind of entertaining. This is kind of quirky. And then they get into the titty twister, which is the bar they all kind of meet up at in the middle of the film. And then all of a sudden it just turns into this Evil Dead-esque vampire film where, you know, the vampires are just completely eviscerating all of the characters, and they all get locked in there and they have to fight off these like ghoulish creatures, you know, until the sun comes up. But, no, I love From Dusk Till Dawn. I think it's just so much fun. I mean, there's never a dull moment. It's got great, you know, witty one-liners and dialogue. George Clooney is just, you know, he's the complete, you know, hero character. I mean, he's such an unlikable scumbag, but at the same time, he's likable because he's, you know, he's so cool under pressure. And then you have Harvey Keitel as the kind of playing against type. You know, he's usually the sleazy guy, but he's the kind of the kind preacher here, and he's really effective as well. And being the big Salma Hayek fan that I am, I can't go without mentioning the the dance with the snake. Love that scene. But no, it's a really, really fun film. I would not recommend any of the sequels that went direct to video. They're uniformly dreadful, but the first From Dusk Till Dawn is just incredible. I loved it.
Cool.
Did anyone notice the use of the Aliens music again on the trailer?
Yes.
The same music used
in Misery, and then they did in Aliens 3, and then in From Dusk Till Dawn.
Yeah.
That's just, it ramps up the tension. That music just ramps up tension.
Do you want to hear a rather embarrassing fact about Ireland? From Dusk Till Dawn, it was banned here.
Really?
Yeah, for a number of years you couldn't get it over. I mean, I don't see the point, because like we're 25 minutes away from the UK, so we could just pop over there and buy it if we wanted.
Well, see, the thing about it, it's not like it's gruesome for gruesome sake. It's kind of campy and over the top.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's strange.
But yeah, it was banned here, so I didn't actually get to see it until about 1999, maybe 2000 or so.
Right.
What did you think about it?
I do like it. Yeah.
So it didn't come out of the cinema.
I probably wouldn't make my top five, I wouldn't say, but I do enjoy it. And I love the making of documentary Full Tilt Boogie.
The Full Tilt Boogie.
That's really great fun, yeah, because it sounds like it was a sort of really fun set to work on. Yeah.
The whole movie just it reminds me of Evil Dead 2, you know, being trapped, and it has that kind of quirky humor to it. Mm. It doesn't drown the film, but it's in the background, and the effects are good. I love Tom Savini's, you know, sex machine character with the pistol on his cock area. I love that. It's just, and it got Fred Williamson as the big guy, and it's just a really fun movie.
I love Quentin Tarantino fantasizing about Juliette Lewis saying certain things to him.
Richie, would you do me a favor and eat my pussy for me? He's like, sure.
Yeah. Well, on that bombshell, thank you very much, Joseph. I think it's time for Eric's number one.
Perfection. A scorched outpost in the middle of nowhere.
You know how close I am to leaving this place right now? How close?
Maybe that's why Val and Earl decided to leave town.
Oh, whoa, 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 whoa.
Hey, hold up. That's Edgar Deans.
They just picked the wrong day to do it.
Jeez.
Could be doing it.
Is that a snake?
I'll give you boys $5 for this. 20. That's how they get you. They're under the ground.
What the hell are those things? How could they eat a whole station wagon?
But where do they come from?
I vote for outer space. No way these are local boys.
You see, they're headed right for us.
No Richter scale can measure it.
They're coming!
No scientist can explain it.
Bert, they're under the ground!
You didn't get penetration even with the alpha gun.
Run, run!
And no one knows what to call it.
Megaworms or suckers or suckoids.
Now this valley is just one long smorgasbord.
Now, it's up to Val and Earl to save the world.
That's one big mother.
Who died and made you Einstein?
And they know just what to do. Flip for it.
Damn.
Kevin Bacon. Fred Ward. Tremors.
Okay, Eric.
Yes, that's the trailer for 1990s, just about making it into the 90s, even though it has a date stamp of 89 at the end, but we'll ignore that. That's Tremors, starring Kevin Bacon and Fred Ward as a couple of yokels who live out in the middle of nowhere in a town called Perfection. It kind of looks like the same type of country as Hills of Eyes. And so the locals suddenly find themselves under attack by giant subterranean worm-like creatures. And to quote you, Justin, this is one of the funnest films you'll ever see. it's a perfect film to show a non-horror enthusiast. If you're trying to compromise on something, this would be it. It has that same fun monster movie feel as films like Piranha or Gremlins. You know, it's totally inoffensive, not gory, but you know, thrilling, funny, So many things, good things about it. The two leads in particular are excellent. I mean, I'm a big fan of Kevin Bacon. Of course, we all remember him well from Friday the 13th. And as a dance movie fan, you know, of course, Footloose is one of my favorite films of all time. You've also got a great ensemble backing them up, which includes Michael Gross, who was fresh off Family Ties at the time, and country singer Reba McEntire, oddly enough, is in there. I just love the film. It's just... there's not one dull moment in it. It's 90 minutes long and it's endlessly rewatchable. So that's why it's made my number one.
Oh, okay. I'm trying to think if I've actually seen it. I'm sure I have.
I don't know. For some reason, I didn't see this in the cinema. I don't know if it skipped theaters over here. I can't imagine it wouldn't have, because I think it was quite successful. But I certainly caught it on video and have loved it ever since.
Mm. Yeah, I saw it on VHS when it was first released. I love Tremors. It's so good. I love Michael Gross as Bert. I mean, I love they're on the roof and they're getting ready to get in that tractor and head up to the mountains, and he's packing all this stuff. And he's like, Bert, we're only going 9 miles. Then he looks at him and he's like messing with all this fuse. He's like, what is that? He's like, that's cannon fuse. He's like, what do you use that for? He's like, my cannon.
Yeah, because Bert, we should say, is a sort of military defense enthusiast. So he has an underground bunker for when the sort of nuclear bomb comes, and he has a shed stacked with machine guns and that to defend himself.
Might I recommend, not necessarily the third or the fourth one, but the first sequel that they released the video with Fred Ward.
Yeah,
it doesn't have Kevin Bacon in it.
Yeah.
Aftershocks. It's actually really, really well done.
I have a vague recollection of seeing it and enjoying it, yeah. And wasn't there a TV series briefly as well?
Yeah, it lasted one season. I never saw it, but I know it lasted one season on Sci-Fi.
Mm. Yeah, I imagine that being quite
limited.
I feel
bad for the worms when they get killed.
Mm. Aww.
Oh,
you're such a pacifist.
Well, it's just like they make, like, I think one of them even makes like a sound like when it gets killed, and it makes me feel bad.
Mm. Oh, by the way, the guy who plays the obnoxious teen Melvin, I can't think of the actor's name, but he's the brother of, is it Billy Jacoby who was
in? Yes, Buddy Jacoby.
Okay. Yeah, he's in, whose brother was in, of course, Bloody Birthday and X-Ray and various other things.
No,
well, just one of the guys.
It's a different brother in Superstition, wasn't it?
Oh, was it? I thought
yeah.
it was.
Hold on. No, which one was.
There's so many of those Jacoby boys.
Oh, no, he was in Superstition, wasn't he? Yeah. But yes. Well, no, thank you, Eric. Well, I'm going to go on a completely different tack. We've already mentioned this film, but this is my number one non-slasher movie from the 1990s.
I just want to apologize to Mike's mom and Josh's mom and my mom. I am so, so sorry, because it is my fault, because it was my project. I am so scared.
Okay, and that was 1999's The Blair Witch Project, which is probably one of the most polarizing horror films ever released. It's a real, you either love it or hate it film. And as we mentioned earlier, I forgot it was you, Joseph, actually. Did you send me the VHS copy? That must have been one.
Yes, because you were writing an article for a magazine or some kind of online publication, and you needed to see the film, but you didn't have it, and so I sent you a copy.
That's right.
98, maybe, I think. Yeah, 99.
It was around about that time, wasn't it? Because it was a Sundance sort of cut of the film. So it was different from the one that was released. And I think they've released a Sundance cut subsequently on DVD, although I might be wrong. And I remember I've still got it somewhere, actually. But it has a different, it's a bit longer and has a bit more shouting, which I think is one of the things that got on people's nerves, actually, was the. Heather Donahue screaming and shouting and moaning throughout, and I think they cut some of that out, although I remember the Sundance cut actually being pretty effective. So the thing, but again, it's one of those films that worked actually really, really well on video, because obviously it was shot on video and it was meant to be a kind of intimate, I kind of guess, a sort of record of what happens to three people. And of course, there's the whole thing at the time, and there was lots of people taken in by it, and it was very clever marketing, because it cost, I can't remember, something $100,000, didn't it? And made over $100 million. So it's probably one of the most probably, if not the most successful film.
It still is the most successful independent film of all time, I think. Yeah. I think it still holds the record.
I think you're probably right, because it was, you know, the conversion there, it was so, so clever. Also, I remember seeing footage of people it getting shown at Cannes, I think, and this is before the hype, but it was part of the hype, and it was all being built up. The people coming out, and there's people crying when they're coming out the screening. And, of course, it was played off this idea that it was the scariest film ever made. Now, the trouble with that, of course, is what you're doing is you're setting yourself, or the filmmaker's setting a challenge to people who are watching it. And The Blair Witch Project, I'm saying, is a polarizing film. Some people love it, some people hate it. I love it. I think it's a very effective piece of filmmaking. But what it doesn't do is give everything to you on a plate. I mean, the ending is very ambiguous. Much of it's very ambiguous, in fact. But the way they shot it is kind of legendary now, is... you know, they played sounds of children to them while they're in tents, and they didn't know what was coming and things like that. So it was shot almost like a not exactly a documentary, but it was that immediacy which kind of really, really worked. And the low budget
kickstarts the whole found footage thing. Yeah, definitely.
It did. I mean, I get a bit annoyed when people go, well, okay, ripped off Cannibal Holocaust. And it's just like, well, yeah, a little bit. But, you know, if you're looking for scares, you don't go to Cannibal Holocaust, you go to the Blair Witch Project, as far as I'm concerned. And I think it was, you know, a very, very effective film. And I've still got, actually, somewhere around, like, a copy of Time magazine, which has got the three of them on the front cover. And it was such a big event that it was on the front of Time magazine. And it goes to show what kind of landmark movie it was. And, you know, I still really enjoy it. I need to rewatch it again fairly soon. But there is talk, again, I think, probably coming around to, well... the 15th documentary fairly soon, 15th anniversary fairly soon of the film in the next couple of years, another sequel is forthcoming, which I wouldn't be at all surprised about. But how about you guys? What are your thoughts on the film 15 or so years later?
Oh, I love it. You know, I think it's really well made. I mean, for what it is. My issue is that a lot of people hated it because of, you know, them being in the woods for so long. A lot of the complaints I heard was, well, they're just in the woods. Why don't they just keep walking? And I don't know about you, but if you go into the woods and you kind of like get off of a trail, even after a few minutes, you start getting kind of worried. So you can kind of imagine after a couple nights being out in the woods that you really would be freaked out. I mean, I thought that the film captured that feeling really well. And like you said, I love the ending with was it Mike standing in the corner?
Yeah,
I love that shot. I mean, that really just terrified me to my very soul when I saw that. I was like, holy shit, that was frightening. And one more tangent, I actually like the sequel, which is totally, you know, kind of different type of film, but I just wanted to mention that because I think it's underrated.
The other film that was out, the one that they kind of said which came first, which name escapes me.
Last Broadcast.
The Last Broadcast. That's the one.
The Last Broadcast, yeah.
And which I didn't rate at all, really, when I saw it. I wasn't mad at it.
I thought it was okay, but yeah. I hated the ending of it.
I like the idea of cleaning up an image until the more you clean it up, you know, the closer you get to the truth. But how about you, Eric? What are your thoughts on
Blair Witch? I did. I loved Blair Witch. The only problem I had is, now you're accusing Joseph of being a girl earlier, but when it comes to motion sickness, I'm a real girl. So when I went to see this in the cinema, I felt hideously ill afterwards because of the shaky cam.
Right.
You know, I've learned my lesson since, so I didn't go see Cloverfield in the cinema, for instance, because I just knew that it was going to have that effect on me again. Yeah. But I do love the film. I remember getting it actually on DVD on import from the States the same week it opened theatrically over here. So I was able to, you know, watch it a few days after, you know, I'd recovered from my vomiting.
I wonder why people get motion sickness at those type of films, because they don't bother me. I don't get it.
No, they do. I mean, I'm a type of person, I can't read on a moving vehicle. Like if I look over someone's shoulder on the bus and I start reading some of their newspaper, I start getting a headache and start feeling a bit queasy. I'm weird. That girly, yeah.
I don't get seasick or anything like that, so I'm quite lucky that way.
I remember going to Alton Towers, which is probably the UK's equivalent of Disneyland, would be the closest thing, and going on a roller coaster called Nemesis with my brother, and we got off it, and my brother went to get a bag of chips, and I was in the bushes getting sick, and we had to go home. Yeah.
Oh, poor Eric.
I know. Yeah, but no, I do love Blair Witch, and like Joseph, I love Blair Witch 2, Book of Shadows. It's let down again, like Cube, it's let down by some really dodgy acting by one of the actors in it, I think. But I think it's a really interesting idea.
Cool. Okay. And how about you, Nathan? What are your thoughts on Blair Witch Project?
I'll never forget when I first saw Blair Witch, because it was one of those things about the last, you know, 10 minutes of the movie when they're exploring that old house. Mm. Like, it's so intense. I mean, you know, it's one of the most intense, you know, feelings I've ever had watching any movie. The problem with me, though, is that it doesn't hold up well rewatching it. I mean, like, I'll never get that. I think I'm being unfair, because I love that feeling, and, you know, you're not going to get it again when you rewatch it, because you know what's coming. Yeah. So, I mean, it doesn't have the same effect on you anymore. So, I mean, rewatching is, you know, rewatching, I actually kind of laugh during a few scenes, especially like you were talking about where with the girl screaming. I mean, some of the scenes, I don't know, it just kind of got a little too overwrought, but, you know, the first time I watched it, I'll never forget that experience, because that was one of the best.
Oh, are we still here?
Yes.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, we had a little
technical glitch there.
A snafu. Yeah.
As for people complaining about why didn't they just leave the woods, the reading I got from the film is that the supernatural element was sort of leading them in circles. So yeah, they had no chance of escaping. So
yeah, no.
The Bear Wench project's really good too.
The Bear Wench.
Yeah, it's where these four sorority sisters have to go do a documentary in the woods, and to keep the Bear Wench away, they have to keep their tops off. Okay. It's very important.
Have we spoken about this before? Because I think there's the one.
Yes.
There's the Blair Fish project, which we talked about, which the models go into the wood and get lost, and they're too stupid to find their way out.
But I think Skype is catching Nathan's cold.
Oh, yes.
Well, I'll tell you what, Nathan, are you going to be all right to? Are you going to be all right to introduce Criminally Insane?
Yes, I will.
I'll tell you, I'm going to play the trailer now. This is our feature presentation on the first of them, and it's a trailer for 1975's Criminally Insane.
In a few moments, two people will die.
I'm going to have to kill you both.
No, Ethel!
Suspense that will shatter your nerves as Fat Ethel, with a maniac's cunning, terrorizes her numerous victim.
Do you think I'm going to let you starve me?
Another kind of monster is loose, and death follows each time that Ethel reaches for the meat cleaver. Gluttonous Ethel, whose love of food in enormous amounts was equaled only by her immense joy in killing.
What's this blood all over the floor?
Okay, Nathan, take it away.
Well, Ethel Janowski is an insane sociopath who is prematurely released from a mental asylum into the care of her grandmother. And she gets back to her grandmother's house, and unfortunately for her grandmother, Ethel just has a gigantic appetite. You know, I mean, she eats, you know, for breakfast, she'll eat, you know, about half a loaf of bread as toast, a whole package of bacon, you know, like 7 or 8 eggs scrambled, you know, and a giant heaping of butter. And her grandmother, you know, learns the hard way that you can't come between Ethel and her number one love, which is food, you know, and that's actually about it for the plot. I mean, it's just about Ethel's quest to, you know, eat, and anybody that stands between her, you know, and food, you know, they're going to find themselves on the wrong end of a knife or a meat cleaver. Another issue about the movie is Ethel's, you know, need to, like, get rid of the bodies. And, you know, she has the hardest time trying to find a way to get rid of, you know, her victims after she's killed them, because obviously the decaying corpses, you know, are stinking up her house. And that's where we get to the very end, where after all these failed attempts, you know, spoiler for everybody, after all these failed attempts, at the end we find out the only way she thinks she can get rid of them and feed her appetite is to resort to cannibalism. My God. She has to actually eat the bodies. But I mean, she probably enjoyed it. I mean, you know, I love Criminally Insane, you know, and I think it's a really quirky, like sleazy, movie. It's very...
Somebody's phone is ringing, I think.
Who's... Can we carry on? Carry on. The Dunkirk spirit. Okay.
I find all the characters to be very sleazy themselves, like Ethel, you know, her sister who, you know, like wakes up one – her sister's a prostitute and, you know, wakes up one morning and, you know, there's like a beer can there with a cigarette in it and she just kind of blows the ashes off and drinks out of it anyway. I mean –
that's classy. That was classy.
Yeah, she's very classy. And her walking around in this nightgown with a big rip in the back of it. I don't want to talk too much about it because I want to give you guys a chance. So I think I'd like to hear from Eric.
Okay, well, I had never seen Criminally Insane until you had mentioned it as a possible film to discuss. I'm actually glad you did because I think it was really entertaining. It's a, what you would call a bona fide grindhouse movie. It has that 1970s stilted dialogue delivered in a deadpan manner style, you know, a lot of scenes are very quiet. The editing has abrupt cuts, but I mean, it's all, this is all praise, by the way. I'm not giving out about the film. You know, had I seen Criminally Insane maybe 10 years ago, I probably would have hated it. But over the last while, I've sort of got into this type of filmmaking, this 1970s American grindhouse cinema. You know, it reminds me of something like Axe, which I think is also known as the California Axe Massacre or Lisa Lisa. It's another film that's very brief, has very little dialogue, and has the same visual look as Criminally Insane. I mean, Criminally Insane hasn't a huge amount of plot. It literally is Ethel murdering people to either, you know, fuel her food addiction or to cover up murders that she's, you know, committed so far. There's not a lot to it other than that. You know, so, I mean, it's, what, 62 minutes? So, I mean, it does fly by, I thought. I found it usually entertaining. It tries to be gruesome, but the blood effects are quite unrealistic. I mean, I suppose what I would compare it to would be the blood maybe in Dawn of the Dead, which is kind of like, I think Tom Savini describes it as looking like melted crayons. It, you know, it has a very unrealistic look. But I do, I can sympathize actually with Ethel, you know, having a rather insatiable appetite for food myself. You know, I've never actually gone and committed murder for the sake of a Mars bar. Maybe if I was penniless, I might. So watch out. But she does remind me a bit of Divine in the early John Waters movies, you know, particularly something like Female Trouble. You know, there's a scene where her grandmother has locked away all the food and she has the key to the cupboards. So Ethel attacks her with a knife, shouting, "I want that key! I want that key!" And you can imagine that being Divine. You know, in my head anyway, I don't know about anyone else. You know, the film also has slight pretensions towards being arty. I don't know how successful that is, but there's certain dream sequences where Ethel is running through a park in slow motion in sort of this red frock. And there's also the scene where she's chopping up a mannequin with a meat cleaver. And the film, you know, has all kinds of funny effects on it. It goes into negative or the film stock is reversed. You know, and it's visually interesting. I don't know if they intended it to be kind of arty or not, or if they just were looking for any kind of element to, you know, bump up the running time. But no, I'm glad you introduced me to Criminally Insane because I did actually really enjoy it.
Well, awesome. What about you, Justin?
Yeah, well, like Eric, I did enjoy it for what it was. I mean, it's by any traditional standards, it's a pretty bad movie, I kind of guess. But then, of course, we wouldn't be making a podcast dedicated to slash movies if all we cared about was polished filmmaking. I thought the performances were all kind of, you know, slightly tongue in cheek in some ways, obviously, because I think the director intended it to be a kind of black comedy all the way through. And I you know, again, I couldn't help but think, as good as she is in the role, I did wonder what it would have been like, just like Eric, if you had Divine in the in as Ethel, or even better, Edith Massey. And just imagine Edith Massey being as Ethel. Then that would have been amazing. But no, I liked it. I liked it. You know, it cost $30,000, which I think, as the director said, you know, it was not a big budget back then, but it was a small budget film. You know, shot on film, and it was it is what it is. You know, it's kind of, it's a black comedy, you know, and of its time. But I liked it. And also, I love the character Rosalie. I really liked the sister. She was like a John Waters character, like trashy John Waters character, like, you know, the prostitute in the kind of 70s kind of gear. And I love it. And my favourite bit in it is when, obviously, Ethel, you know, the spoilers, it kills her grandmother because the grandmother won't give her the key to the cookie jar or whatever it is. And so she locks away the bodies in grandma's room. But sister slutty Rosalie turns up eventually with her abusive boyfriend, who's got a penchant for putting on makeup because thinks he's going to make him look like a movie star. And they start smelling the bodies mouldering away in grandma's room. And my favourite line in it is Rosalie saying, "Grandma must have shit all over the bed before she left." Because Ethel has kind of said to her that grandma's gone away to visit a friend. So the only way she can explain it away, the smell coming in grandma's room, is that grandma shat the bed before she left. And surely you would have thought if grandma, you know, she might have thought, why would grandma shit the bed and then leave it? But who knows? Who knows in these kind of films? But it's, you know, it's of its time. And if you're looking for a good slash movie, I wouldn't recommend this film. But if you're looking for a very quirky cult kind of example of low budget American filmmaking, then you can certainly do a lot worse than this. So that's my tuppence.
Great. Joseph?
Oh, I love Criminally Insane. You know, the first time I saw it was in 96 or 97. The Gourmet from Alt Horror had sent me a copy, and he protested it was one of his favorite grindhouse films. So I saw it and I did not like it, you know, because back then I wanted the kind of fast paced kind of stuff. But you know, I've since grown to love it a lot. I mean, like you've all said, it doesn't overstay its welcome. It's only like 60 minutes long. It's really odd, bizarre kind of film. I actually think, you know, even though the performances are stilted, I think that kind of lends to the charm. It gives it that whole, it is a product of its time feel. The blood being completely pink and fake looking is another thing I like. And I like how every time Ethel goes to kill someone, instead of making a squish sound like it, you know, like it normally does in a slasher film, it makes like a thud, thud, like she's hitting the floor. It's like, doo, 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 doo. And, you know, I love all the dialogue. I love, you think I'm going to let you sit here and starve me? And then I love the whole, that goddamn Jew doctor only gave me one piece of toast and half an egg for breakfast. I love that. And, like, you know, I love the ending when Buck Flower comes in and she's eating the bodies. And his only reaction is this kind of apathetic, my God. It's almost like, Ethel, you wacky, zany girl, what are you up to now?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I love Criminally Insane. It is what it is, like you said. Yeah, I mean, I'd recommend it for grindhouse aficionados.
Cool.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's obviously your sleazy, you know, grindhouse. And, you know, talking about Ethel, I mean, Ethel's sister...
I just want to say one more thing. We were watching it last night with Greg. It was so funny watching him watch that because he was so disgusted. I don't know if he hated it, but you could tell because Greg's one of those fitness fanatics, and he's disgusted with like morbidly obese people. And he's just sitting there looking at Ethel's like, my God, she's disgusting. And it's just getting so cracked up like watching him look at it. And you know how he hides his face at scary moments? He actually hid his face when it showed a close up of her. He covered his eyes like it was scaring him.
He's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
I love the scene where Ethel tries to take Grandma's body and get rid of her by throwing her over a cliff. And she spends all that time dragging the body out of the house, getting it into the car, taking it all the way to a cliff. And then a family turns up to, you know, to have a constitutional, a little wander about. Though she puts the body back in the car, drives all the way home, drags it all the way back up into the house. She could have just waited for that family to go, couldn't she? But no. But then she was insane, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was crazy. She was very childlike, too, you know, with her temper tantrums and her, you know, innocence when they're snorting cocaine in front of her and they tell her it's nasal medicine.
Yeah.
Was it not nasal medicine? No.
No.
It was Afrin. So. It was Afrin.
All right.
And what about the boyfriend, the pimp boyfriend, who's so sleazy? He comes back after beating up Rosalie. Oh, you got that clip, Justin, where he explains why he beat her up?
I do. Here we go.
Come on, Rosalie, you know that I love you.
If you love me so much, how come you beat the hell out of me?
Rosalie, I'm going to tell you the truth for once, okay? You need a good beating every once in a while. All women do. And you especially. Okay?
I love that music is playing in the ground.
Yeah. Treat him mean and keep him keen.
I know.
What is that? You especially. All women do, and you especially. And then she's okay with this because she just starts kissing him after that. You know,
she melts in his arms. She's like, oh my God. It's like she's got a newfound love and appreciation for him after that little speech.
Although, you know, she's kind of a tragic character because she's obviously one of these people who's been kicked around and has no self-worth whatsoever. I mean, she lets her boyfriend treat her however. I mean, even the scene where she drinks that beer with the cigarettes in it, I mean, she obviously, you know, doesn't care about herself until her life is on the line when Ethel corners her with the meat cleaver. You know, what's crazy about that is, you know, when she's begging Ethel and she's like, you know, please don't hurt me, Ethel. Ethel hesitates, you know, like she's not going to do it, you know, because it's her sister. But then Rosalie just starts screaming. So then Ethel's like, oh, God, now I got to shut you up. I mean, why did she scream like that? If she would have just kept begging, then Ethel might have let her live.
Rosalie is the child of fire of grindhouse cinema.
She is. If I knew that's
an obscure The Body Count Continues reference that probably only Nathan will understand.
I don't understand.
No.
I will say that Ethel is the 1970s embodiment of Jan Terry.
Yes, indeed. And you know who Jan Terry is, don't you, Nathan?
No, I don't know who Jan Terry is.
You don't?
She's a Chicago-based singer. I'm doing my quote, I'm doing my sort of inverted commas action here. You have a clip there, don't you?
I do.
Yeah, that's Jan Terry.
I remember.
You heard clips there of Losing You and then Get Down Goblin. Visually, she wouldn't be a million miles away from Ethel.
Toya. Oh, sorry, yeah.
Ethel. Oi!
Well, musically,
I got a question
anyway.
For you guys, though.
Sorry?
Who was your favorite character in the movie?
Probably Ethel for me because, as I said, I sympathize with her quest for food.
Yeah.
I think mine is Rosalie. I don't know why, but it's just something about her that I like.
I did like the boyfriend's hair.
Oh,
yeah.
What about when he slapped her and they did slow motion? I mean, that was...
I know. It was such a bad slap.
What's funny about that is he barely... I mean, you could tell it was staged. He barely hit her. Then they had to show it in slow motion. I mean, it was already slow to begin with. Why show it in slow motion?
It's one of those many mysteries. And, of course, the woman, Patricia Alden, isn't it, who played Ethel,
Priscilla,
wasn't it? She died, was it a few years back?
Yeah, 2007.
We'll be talking about the immediate sequel relatively soon. But, unfortunately, there will not be any more Crazy Fat Ethel involving Priscilla because she's dead. But, Nathan, have you got any background on the film?
I do have a little bit. You know, it was filmed in 1973 in San Francisco. Like you said, the budget was $30,000, shot in 5 weeks. And one interesting fact is that Priscilla Alden, you know, despite her size, didn't really eat that much. And the whole scenes where she had to eat, she was disgusted, you know, cooking all that bacon and eggs and stuff. It was very disgusting to her. I don't know if you guys noticed, but when she's sitting there in one scene eating a huge plate of ice cream, she's barely getting any on her spoon and eating it each time. You know, she's not getting big globs of it like you would expect Ethel to do. So she was kind of disgusted with all the food, you know. And, you know, since there was such a small budget, you know, of course they didn't have anything in the way for special effects. You know, like you could tell with the blood, the way it looked. The decomposing bodies were achieved by using an avocado mask and peeling it back in places to make it appear like their skin was rotting.
It was very effective, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, I thought that.
At least they used food. At least they used food to do the effects.
Yeah.
Keeping in tone with the film.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. You know, kept in tone. I agree with that.
I was amazed, though, that when she used the sorry to interrupt, but when she did that whole thing with spray, you got some spray, you know, like air freshener, and sprayed it on Granny's face. So it looked like they were using a real air freshener, didn't they? That's real dedication.
Yeah. Well, they said that the actress playing the grandma actually did go through a lot. I mean, she dragged her upstairs and everything. I mean, she was a trooper. I have to give her that. Absolutely. Jane Lambert was her name. And like Joe said, you know, Buck Flower played the cop, and of course he's one of these character actors that went on to play in a ton of B movies. You know, he's pretty awesome. I always liked him in those movies too, or in all his movies actually.
Well, he's in quite a lot of slasher movies, wasn't he? Like Berserker and Chili de Camp, and sort of, you know, lots of other films.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. One thing I wanted to point out, you know, that's all the background I have for part one, but one thing I wanted to point out is, you know, it's interesting to me, like, one reason I like the character of Rosalie is she's so different. When she first gets there, she insults Ethel, you know, talk about how fat she is. And then there's even another scene where she's like, you know, talks about Ethel being too busy cooking or eating to even smell, you know, what's the big, you know, stench in that house. But then there's other times where she jumps to her defense. I think that's an interesting character trait. You know, like when the boyfriend insults her, Rosalie jumps to Ethel's defense. I think that's another reason I like that character.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. I mean, there's very little information, isn't there, about the film, really? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's the DVD that was put out a while back, which has got some interviews, isn't it, with the director and Priscilla Alden on it, which was done, I think, in 2005. That's pretty much all the information I did. Do you know if it got a cinema release? Because I could find no record of it being released theatrically.
I don't know.
I mean, they talk about it getting, he talks about it getting good reviews, but I don't know if that was on video or what it was. But but obviously, is there anything else you wanted to say about the film before we move on to the sequel?
I had a couple things. Okay, I mean, the only background information I knew was that obviously, Buck Flower was the detective, but for some reason, he was credited under the name C.L. LaFleur. I don't know if he just wanted to use a pseudonym or not, but also, Priscilla Alden actually did a rather famous, not a famous film, but a rather big-budget Hollywood film with Robin Williams and Hugh Grant and Julianne Moore called, was it 9 Months?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so I didn't know that.
Oh, she had her moment in the sun.
Yeah, cool. Excellent. Well, thank you, Joseph. How about you, Eric? Have you got any background for us?
I did, but it's all been said now.
Yes.
Do you want me to, I can mention the avocado face mask again if you want.
Well, you watched the DVD, didn't you, Eric?
I did.
That's where I got my information.
Yeah.
I must say that she was eating the biggest baked potato I've ever seen when she was.
She was, wasn't she?
That was huge. Oh. I've never seen a potato that big.
I wonder if she did anything to the boyfriend. Because, you know, there's a scene where she's in bed and he's in bed next to her. I thought that was kind of weird.
Well, she was like watching him crawling away with covered in red paint with his tighty whities and looking down at his, well, presumably his nether regions. But
unfortunately, his tighty whities weren't necessarily white.
No, they weren't.
Ew.
Wasn't that the underwear choice? Though?
But I did think the only other link that I thought he might have, the director might have kind of ripped off a little bit, this is a connection with Halloween, was the double murder of the sister and the boyfriend was similar to the double murder at the beginning of Blood and Lace, the 1971 Grindhouse classic, which I think I wouldn't be at all surprised. Because with the director, I mean, he was quite... I mean, if you look at his... he doesn't really talk about it when he on the... on the background stuff, but he obviously made his name, well, not even made his name, but made some money making pornos. I don't know if they were hardcore or softcore, but if you look at his IMDb thing, it's all things like Perversions and the Inner Sanctum of Charlotte and things like that. I've just made those up. I don't know if they're real names, but it's that kind of, those kind of 60s kind of grindhouse pornos. And again, I don't know if they're hardcore or not, but he was sort of saying that when he made this film, it was one step up from the gutter onto the sidewalk. But he carried on making these kind of films, and as we're going to talk about, he also went on to make the sequel, didn't he? And shall we move on to the sequel now?
I believe that we should.
We should. Well, we haven't got a trailer for it, but I do have a clip from Crazy Fat Evil 2.
Right down your house.
Hello, Mrs. Bartholomew. This is Dr. Stevens at Napa State Hospital.
Oh, yes. Hello, doctor.
Mrs. Bartholomew, we have a patient by the name of Ethel Janowski who I'd like to transfer to your care.
You know I'm always ready to help, doctor.
Yes, I do. But I wanted to speak with you personally about Ethel. She's given us only minor problems in the 13 years she's been here at Napa. But she was responsible for the murder of 6 people. Her first victim was her grandmother. That was in 1973.
I see.
The decision rests entirely with you, Mrs. Bartholomew.
Well, doctor, you know my motto. We must never lose hope.
Okay. Nathan, do you want to tell us a little bit about the sequel, Crazy Fat Ethel 2?
Well, it seems that after the detectives found Ethel cannibalizing the bodies, they sent her back to the mental asylum for a while. And for some reason, the geniuses at the mental asylum decide that, oh, okay, well, we'll release her again. So they release her to a halfway house, Hope Bartholomew, who, you know, obviously, like the clip said, we must never lose hope. But unfortunately, Ethel, you know, it gets to the point where there's rules about the food. And, of course, you know, when people try to mess with Ethel's food intake, they got to die. So, you know, the people at the halfway house start getting killed off once they get in her way. One thing that I think is really funny about it is she murders a worker who eats a candy bar in front of her and feeds her dog food. So she kills him, and it's witnessed by this guy that's at the halfway house. So he decides he's going to blackmail her rather than turn her in, and the blackmail consists of she has to give him her dessert, you know, every night from then on. Obviously, this guy didn't really, you know, I mean, that's not really a lot to blackmail somebody, you know, about, you know, like your dessert, that's what you want. I guess what else can Ethel give him? You know, it's not like she has any money. I love, you know, Hope Bartholomew, the little old lady who's, you know, super friendly, but, you know, of course, you know, she's sort of like Ethel's grandma part one, you know. She messes with Ethel's bag of pretzels. It's not a good idea. You know, this is shot on video consisting of probably 50 to 60% flashbacks to Criminally Insane. You know, so I gotta be honest, even though I love it, you know, I'll be honest and say that, you know, it's only like 30 minutes of a new movie, really. I got a little more to say, but I think I'll turn it over to Eric again.
Yeah, well, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear, as much as I loved Criminally Insane, I have to say I did not care for the sequel at all. It's truly a film only you could love, Nathan, I'm sorry to say. It's the definition of a hastily cobbled together sequel. As you said, it's more or less 60% footage from the original film, you know, leaving you with little more than 25 to 30 minutes of new material that's beyond amateurish, in my opinion. It's shot on video, which automatically creates an obstacle for me because I you know, I'm not ashamed to say I have a prejudice against anything shot on video. You know, 99.9% of the time, if it's shot on video, I'm not going to enjoy it, and that was the case with this film. You know, there doesn't seem to be any post-production work done on the audio at all. I mean, you heard in that clip there that the ambient sound changed from shot to shot. I mean, it made Birdemic look like a Michael Bay production in comparison. It was really, really awful. You know, the editing is about as slick as my dance moves, I have to say, which is not very slick at all. And the acting is so bad, it makes the bimbos from Terror at Ten Killer look like a couple of Hillary Swanks. You know, it's really really bottom of the barrel stuff. And I mean, you can get a chuckle out of that maybe for 5 or 10 minutes. But when you have to sit and watch the film for 58 minutes, which I know is still really, really short, I still found the film really dragged. I did, however, in its defense, there's one scene towards the end where Ethel does this kind of trippy dance around the garden, waving a knife in the air, that I found was quite interesting. And it reminded me, well, it didn't remind me, but I imagine that's what the kind of dancing that Justin does is goth discos. would I be wrong?
Calling me fat?
Justin?
Sorry? You calling me fat?
No, I'm just saying it's the type of dancing you would do at your goth discos. Just like, you know, really spacey, trippy, twirling around. No?
Back in the day, it used to be called chicken dancing.
Oh.
So...
See, I'm learning something new every day.
Oh, I'll show it to you sometime.
Okay, well, my opinion of Criminally Insane 2, or Crazy Fat Ethel 2, is not worth your time. Stick with the original, which is actually quite good.
Okay. I see. All right, Justin?
Yes, well, I have to echo what Eric said, really. I mean, it probably was possibly the longest hour of my life. It does feel like it goes on and on forever. I think partly, to be fair, because I'd watched Criminally Insane so recently, to actually watch the film do so many flashbacks for no reason at all, apart from to pad out the running time, was criminal. You know, I mean, and you know, it makes something like Uli Lommel's Boogeyman 2 look like The Exorcist, really. You know, or Silent Night, Deadly Night. Part two look like Black Christmas. I mean, it really is, you know, it's pretty awful. I mean, I liked it. To start off with, the bits, you know, I loved the granny character, the woman at the halfway house. I mean, she approached the greatness of something like Edith Massey in the John Waters films completely unintentionally. And I loved the when she was taking the phone calls, the phone she has, the cord has been cut. So they didn't even, whether that may have been an in-joke, I don't know, possibly. I thought it's strange that they've got this halfway house for mental patients, or people who have been recovered, who are just full of murderous, completely mental people. One of the guys, Greg, spends his whole time trying to be a fly on the wall, I think. I think that's what he's trying to
do. I thought he was trying to be Marcel Marceau.
Well, it was kind of like that, wasn't it? And then he's running around the garden stamping on bugs and then putting them in his pocket to eat them later. It doesn't really strike me as the kind of place where you'd put people who are recovering enough for halfway to go back into society. And then, of course, they put Ethel in, who they didn't learn from their first mistake, which was releasing her in the first place. And then she goes in to kill so many people in the first film. Then they release her again. I there's bits in it I liked. You know, she's, you know, Patricia Alden's good again, you know, in the character. In fact, I think she's probably slightly better in the sequel than she is in the original. I think she's slightly more accomplished, probably not quite the right word, but I do like that, you know, the little touches, like when she stabs the one guy four times before the last time she stabs him with a different knife, she stops and takes a bite of her apple, which bizarrely reminded me of when the killer in Inside, the French slash movie, stops to have a cigarette. I just thought little touches like that were quite nice, but... yeah, I couldn't, you know, it's just like spending 5 minutes of a 58-minute movie, spending almost 5 minutes showing someone putting dog food on plates. You know, it's just clearly, it just doesn't, I just don't understand why you would do that. I don't know. Yeah, that's my tuppence again.
Joseph?
Yeah, Nathan's completely alone on this one. Like I said, Crazy Fat Ethel 2 is complete torture to sit through. I mean, it's an hour long. Half of it is criminally insane flashbacks. And even watching that, I was bored, because if I wanted to watch that, I would just watch Criminally Insane. The one thing I do like the character of the halfway house woman that Ethel gets sent to. I found her kind of... overly friendly, I guess. I mean, she kind of stood out, but the rest of the movie is just complete garbage. I mean, the quality is terrible. I mean, I watched it. Not only was the sound awful, as Eric pointed out, but the copy I watched, whoever recorded it from VHS had some kind of buzzing, so that made it equally worse. I mean, I sat there the whole time, you know, mouth agape. I was like, is this ever going to end? I mean, it just would not go off. I mean, at an hour feels like three. I mean, it's nowhere. I mean, I'm not saying Criminally Insane is a great film by any stretch of the imagination, but I mean, when you compare the two, I mean, it's apples and oranges. I mean, it's just it's an abysmal film. It's shot on video. I'm not a huge fan of shot on video films at all. I mean, there's been a couple that have been, you know, tolerable, but this is bottom of the barrel stuff here. And there's no way I would recommend this to even my worst enemy. I mean, if you want fat people obsessed with food who kill, just stick with the original.
I recommend it for me.
Well, yeah, you like everything. There's nothing you hate.
Nathan, I'm curious. Have you ever seen Doris Wishman's A Night to Dismember?
I have not seen it, but I want to.
I think you should watch it because I think you would, you know, I think going by your track record, you might quite like it.
That is an appalling film right there.
I do want to see it, though. I really do.
It's not quite Night of Horror bad, but pretty close.
Oh, I have seen Night of Horror. I do agree it's worse than Crazy Fat Ethel 2.
It is. That's the worst film ever
made. It really is, yeah. Mm.
But hands down, I mean, Night to Dismember is awful. It's kind of it's Doris Wishman, who made loads of sexploitation films, a famous kind of, you know, Nude on the Moon and things like that, and Deadly Weapons, I think she made. But it's her slasher movie, basically. She made a slasher movie in 1983, although it's probably made a little bit earlier. And the film itself is just mind-bogglingly awful. And famously, she made a trailer which got destroyed, I think. So they had to reshoot the whole thing for the actual film. So it made a trailer to raise money. But it's got, hands down, the best ever audio commentary with Doris Wishman and I think a cameraman, which is it's like a John Waters movie. The whole thing is just absolutely hilarious. So if you've not seen it, Nathan, I think you would adore that film. So I recommend
it. I will seek it out.
Yeah, definitely. Well, have you got anything else you want
Nathan,
to say?
Yeah, I just wondered, did Nathan like the scene where Ethel sits and eats a bowl of Angel Delight for about 20 minutes? Well, what seems like 20 minutes.
Well, now, see, I do understand what you guys are saying, that, like, scenes like the dog food scene and stuff like that, it's just, it's really long just to be long, you know, like, I mean, you wouldn't need to show it that much.
Hmm. I mean, I did like the where the guy from the hospital calls around and he's chased around the table by Ethel wielding a knife.
Oh, gosh.
You know, and the two of them have all the sort of urgency of somebody playing musical chairs.
Yeah.
Mm.
That was funny. Problem with
he's doing a light jog. I mean, this guy should easily be able to outrun Ethel. I mean, he barely runs.
See, I think the problem with Crazy Fat Ethel too is that Criminally Insane is basically a joke. I mean, it's one long joke, and the punchline is that to get rid of the body, she eats them. That's the joke. I mean, you can't really expand on that joke. I mean, that ending was a perfect capper to that whole premise, and then to kind of drag it out and do it again in the second film, it's just kind of, okay, we've been over this before, and it's just, that's the problem I see with it.
None of you thought that the ending to Crazy Fat Ethel 2 rivaled the ending to Criminally Insane?
Oh, God, no.
Well, I see they were trying to do that. They were going for that kind of similar thing, but it didn't really rival it. And also, I don't know. Yeah, it wasn't quite the same, was it? Have you seen, just on a different tangent, or the same tangent, have you seen Death Nurse 1 and 2?
Yes. Oh, God, I love the Death Nurse movies. They're better than Crazy Fat Ethel 2.
They'd want to be.
Yeah. In what way? Are they... I mean, they've got her in it, haven't they? Playing a kind of Ethel-esque
character. Yeah. Well, actually, her character in this is a nurse, and she's not like an Ethel at all. She's like a lot more outspoken, and she has a lot more dialogue in the Death Nurse movies. And it's got the same people from Crazy Fat Ethel 2, like the same Hope Bartholomew plays like characters in Part 1 and 2. Mm. You know, like, and it's got just most of the same actors in it, but. I don't know, like Death Nurse, even though it does feature a couple of flashbacks to Criminally Insane, and I have no idea why, but it only takes up maybe like 5 minutes of the whole runtime, you know. Crazy Fat Ethel 2, a lot of it felt like they were having to pad out stuff. Death Nurse didn't really feel that way for most of it. I mean, you know, a lot of it, you know, she, you know, it just feels like new movies, basically. It didn't feel like a retread like Crazy Fat Ethel 2 did.
Okay. Oh, well, thanks for that, Nathan. Is there anything else you want to say before we move on to feedback?
The Hope Bartholomew from Crazy Fat Ethel 2 was the director's mother playing in that movie. And the director is the guy that got chased around the table by Ethel. And obviously the Death Nurse movies were filmed back-to-back right after Crazy Fat Ethel 2. And they're coming out on DVD, and there's a Death Nurse Facebook page that people should check out.
Oh, I'm washing my hair, sorry.
You haven't seen Death Nurse, Eric.
Sorry?
Even though they're shot on video. You haven't seen the Death Nurse movies yet.
Yeah, I know, Yeah,
I'm sure Nathan will choose them.
Well, knowing Nathan, he'll probably pick them eventually.
I will eventually. I'm just warning you.
Why do you hate us so much?
I don't. But I'm a little hurt, though, because you guys all say that y'all, or, you know, Joseph and Eric say you're not big fans of shot on video, and none of you mentioned The Gathering and you're recently seen.
Oh, The Gathering. Yeah. Directed by Nathan Johnson and starring.
Yeah, I was in it and directed it.
Well, I wasn't sure if you wanted it, you were ready for the world to know.
I'm ready for the world to know because I really want to hear your thoughts on it.
He wants the world to know.
It's great. I mean, I was curious actually, Nathan. Because when I made films on camcorders back in the day, it was kind of, the only way you could edit it was to do it in camera. So you'd film something and then you rewind the tape and then you just film that would be your film. Is that how you did it, or did you edit it on anything?
I didn't edit it on anything. I had to use the camera. That's why it's edited so badly.
No, but it has a certain charm, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I don't have those boots anymore.
You don't? Oh, that's a shame. That's a shame. Because
he should make a sequel and call it Death Nathan. Death Nathan 2.
Yeah.
Oh, I think he should call the sequel as Crazy Skinny Nathan 2, is what I said to him the other day. Yeah. Because he's so skinny in it.
I was very skinny. I'm not skinny.
You look like Michael from Salute Your Shorts, the first season.
What Joseph had to say about my aunt, who just stands there talking to the killer while he runs at her with a butcher knife.
When she's reading the will. It's a air conditioning, like, what is it? Some kind of insulation piece of insulation paper. This is a nice will.
Yeah, this is a great will. Look like she's reading it.
But, like, it's a very entertaining read, and it's not even a will. It's a piece of insulation paper.
I would have liked Nathan. The only thing that would have made it better for me if the killer had been wearing high heels or cha-cha heels, and then at the end you open the door and you get out and you're wearing cha-cha heels. That would have been good.
Oh yeah, it really makes no sense the way I'm wearing those boots with like
shorts.
I mean,
shorts and a t-shirt. Right. You're wearing rain boots. It's not raining. You're wearing shorts and a t-shirt.
I got killed so easy.
What was the point of the woman hiding in the closet and then you walk by and then the second later you're inside the car? What were you getting ready to leave? You're just waiting for her to come out to the car?
No, see, the thing is, I was getting ready to leave because I couldn't find her. Yeah. So I was just like, to heck with this. You know, she'll think that the red herring is the one that did it, so I'll leave. But then she came out.
Voorhees do that, or Michael Myers, you know.
Well, see, the bad thing about that, though, Nathan, is that your motive is that you were last in line for the inheritance. So if you killed everyone, you would get the inheritance. But if you left her to her own devices, that means she would still be alive and you wouldn't get the money after all. So that was very dumb planning on your part.
Maybe I thought I'd kill her later.
Okay.
You know? Yeah, well, I'd find a way to kill her later, you know.
And this is from 1995, wasn't it, I believe?
Yes.
So it's of a vintage. Yes.
You know, the funny part is the editing was so bad. I loved the part where I believe it was your father and your uncle. They walked outside, and then for a split second, you could hear the Cranberries zombie playing in the background. It's like, zombie, click.
Oh.
Yeah, I had to cut it off. And then there's like a Reba McEntire song being played during one scene. And I love the dialogue I give them, too, because my grandmother in that one scene, she's like, I don't know what I'm going to wear. I guess I'll just wear what I got on today.
I liked all the shoes on the back of the door. Was that is that a Tennessee thing?
I don't. That was my that's my grandma thing.
Okay. And can people view this, Nathan? Is it open
to
view?
Can view it on YouTube. I mean, it's there under The Gathering 1995. Don't be too hard on it because I know it's awful.
And also, it's not your only movie, Nathan, is it? There is more.
Oh, I'm putting up Hairdresser Massacre and Voodoo Massacre. I found them, so I'm going to be putting them up soon.
What about Old Federal Massacre?
Old Federal Massacre I've already put up, so you can find it on there, too. I think it's in the search engine now. I mean, if you go search YouTube for Old Federal Massacre, you should find it.
Cool. Excellent. Well, we'll keep an eye out for that. So I think we're all going to come back in a minute and do some feedback. So see you in a moment.
Hi, this is Lauren Marie Taylor from Friday the 13th Part 2 and Girls Night Out. And you're listening to The Hysteria Continues.
Right, and we're going to do a little bit of feedback now. Maybe to start off, what we'll do is we've got a voicemail from Remy on the forums. And thank you for phoning in. And here's Remy's comments.
Hey, Hysteria Continues. Just wanted to say that you're doing a fantastic job. This is Rembrandt 36 from the Body Count Continues forums. And I've loved every episode. I mean, sometimes I like what you guys say, sometimes I don't like, but hey, that's the spice of life because not everybody's going to have the same opinions. Really did enjoy the Night School recent podcast. I do think it's an underrated movie. Matter of fact, I think I'm going to have to pick that one up. Just because it's been a long time and been a while since I've seen it, and I've heard that the, you know, you guys have talked about how pristine the Warner Brothers copy of it is. So thank you for turning me on to that again. Yes, Rachel Ward is a little stilted, but hey, she looks absolutely freaking fantastic in that movie. And no, I don't think that's a body double. Let's see. The only other thing I could think of, guys, is, you know, I've said this on the forums before, it would really kind of help if it could be suggested to some of the guests. It's like, you know, we're going to have you on the show. Could you at least watch your movie once or twice before we get you on the air? Because you guys had some fantastic you know, conversations with past stars or directors or people that have been on the crew. But you've also had a good percentage of them where, you know, the people are just like, oh, wow, you know, gee, that's 30 years ago. I can't remember anything about it, which really doesn't make for interesting conversation listening to or talking to that person. But overall, guys, you do a great job. Happy holidays. And why should people continue to listen to the Hysteria Continues podcast? Well, I'll give a really simple reason. It's got a death curse!
Well, thank you, Remy, for that. And, yes, well, I mean, it's all valid comments. I mean, of course, we're running on we hit a bit of a dry patch as far as interviews go, but who knows what's coming. So we need to get some...
I do know exactly what he means, though. A lot of them can't remember anything about the film, and there's very little information coming out of them. Yeah, sadly.
Sadly, but yeah, well, it's difficult enough getting them, isn't it? It's trying to get, you know,
I just feel blessed if I get in contact with anyone. I just wouldn't have the nerve to say, oh, by the way, would you mind watching the film? I'm too shy, as Kajagoogoo once sang.
A too shy, indeed. Mm-hmm. But
hush, hush, anyway.
I know. How about you, Joseph? You were going to. We've had quite a lot of feedback on the forums, and you were going to summarize some of that for us, weren't you?
Yes, I'll do that first. I do have one email, but I'll do the forums first because people are kind of getting all over us for not shouting out. But this is pretty much from the Body Count Continues, my website's forums. Basically, it's a summary of everything that's been said. So far, you guys are ripping on Humongous, and it makes me pissed. The characters are some of my favorites, and to me, it's not about the kills. 3 out of 10? No. 8 out of 10 for me. I like the dick being off early because it was different from other formulas, and man, I just wish one of you four would have defended it more. I think it's brilliant. At least Justin kind of warmed up to it. How depressing. That was from Body Boy. And additionally, Body Boy says, I hope the 26 episodes of 2012 are just as good as this year's. Thanks, guys. And then BTK wrote and said, 2 voicemails, 2. I banned the podcast. Banned. And to reply to BTK, that is my fault that we have not played your voicemails. The service I use, if you don't take them off their server within a specific amount of time, they delete them. And I got totally sidetracked and lost your voicemail. So I will not let that happen again. Bacon Tomato Kaiser. That's his name.
Is that what it stands for?
No, it's a bind, torture, kill. It's like a serial killer, but Remy actually called him Bacon Tomato Kaiser.
Oh.
And it kind of stuck. And we also have one from Rembrandt again. He says, my challenge to the podcast is that all four guys have to do the show stone cold sober. No problem for me since I'm not a drinker, but with no hangovers and no drinking during the show. It will be a very different podcast. That's from Rembrandt 36. And then this is from 42nd Street Freak. He says, you guys roll my snowball and deck my halls. Ignore the knickers, knockers. Excuse me, Bishop, is that your crook, haters? Keep the lovable smut fun stuffs coming. Can't be too dry and studious, you know. As long as the top information and discussions on the films keep coming, too. Ooh, I've dropped me knickers, Vicar. It's all randy dandy. Ding dong and happy Christmas, 42nd Street Freak. And finally...
Before we get that, we could have to, just in honor of 42nd yes. Street.
Excellent. Well done, Nathan.
Well, it seems a little bit rickety, Doctor.
Is it? Yes, but of course it's fairly easy to get it up. It's getting it to stay up. That's what counts.
Yeah,
and carry on.
Had to do it. Finally, from Cabe Gaplin, he says, great podcast as usual, guys. I understand some people getting antsy during the double entendres, and maybe I'll start to get annoyed once I actually watch a carry-on film all the way through. Right now, it's fine. Cabe Gaplin. And that's all the forum summarization for now.
And thank you, everyone, for
getting back to Remy. Forums. Can Justin do the podcast without a glass of wine? Is that possible?
I can, and I did today. I didn't have a glass of wine. I had an apple juice instead. So there you go. What were you drinking today, Eric?
Gin and tonic.
Oh, there you go.
Very, very, very Abigail's party, I know.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. But I think it's an unfair advantage because if it's the other way around, I imagine that Nathan would have, I don't know, a stiff one in his hand or something at this. If this
is yeah,
I would.
Yeah,
well, I need to get a good stiff one inside me when I'm doing the podcast. I find it helps me.
Well, indeed.
Good Lord, you know the double entendres here are
coming.
They're very
fast.
Big. They're very
a good
big.
Stiff one inside me.
What? I don't understand what you mean.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. Yeah, Nathan, who didn't know the thing about rings and moons. So anyway, on to more feedback. Nathan, have you got anything for us?
No.
I do.
Eric, what have you
okay,
got
I've got one from our friend Tosca Topsox, who lives in Toyaland, also known as Duran Duran Land, and sometimes known as Musical Youth Land, which is also known as Birmingham in the UK. He says, Happy New Year, Joseph, Justin, Eric, and Nathan. I'm a bit behind with the podcast due to the festive season, but I'm now back on track and halfway through the humongous edition. Another great show, guys, and great to see May and Inside getting some love. I hope you and all of your listeners have a fantastic 2012. Any chance of a future interview with April Fool's Day star Deborah Foreman? Even though I've always travelled on the other bus, I must admit to having a bit of a crush on Deborah when I was younger, and a catch-up interview would be fab. Wishing you all the best, as always, Tosca. So Tosca gets the 17A, by the sounds of it.
Ooh.
I don't know what that's got to do with Deborah Foreman, but...
Mm.
Yeah. Anyway, do any of us know Deborah Foreman? Deborah Foreman, even?
I know who she is.
No, but have you? Have you? You've never met her at a convention, or
no? She's never been to a convention I've been to. I would like to meet her, though. I like her a lot.
What other horror films is she in apart from April Fool's Day? Was she in Waxwork?
I saw Waxwork. I saw that recently, actually, and she's in that. She's now a yoga instructor and a website builder. She's got websites you can go to. So, and she talks about horror films a bit in her biography on there. So I think she does say if the right role came along, she would act again. But at the moment, she just spends her time building websites and doing yoga. I think she was in a few other horror films, and none of them come to mind. But I presume we just
she was in I Madman, wasn't she? Or no, that was no, that wasn't her. Who was that? Okay.
That was Jenny Wright, wasn't it?
Yeah, Jenny Wright. I was thinking of Clayton Rohner because he was in April Fool's Day with her. That's right.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but wouldn't we have tried to get in contact with her when we did the April Fool's Day episode?
Well, I don't think we were like doing gung-ho interviews by then because that was only the third episode.
Yeah, that was my first episode, so I wouldn't have.
So certainly, I would like to try. Maybe. I mean,
yeah,
we can try.
Well, let's go for it. Well, I've got a very lengthy sort of email here from our friend Terry in Belgium. We are running a little bit out of time because I'm just about to go out. So I hope you won't mind, Terry, if I kind of summarise your email a little bit. But what he says was, first, he'd like to wish you and your podcast friends, Nathan, Eric and Joseph, a very, very Merry Christmas. So thank you for that, Terry. He'd also like to congratulate us again on the podcast because they're always fun and informative and entertaining. I am quoting from Terry's email here. He says, I've read through your Facebook page that your outstanding book, Teenage Wasteland, which I proudly have, will be released in the USA, which is very true, in June this year, June the 1st, it's going to be coming out. So look out for that. And he asks what we think of his top three slash films of all time. His number one is My Bloody Valentine, which obviously we've covered in the podcast. Also, Black Christmas, which of course we followed in. We covered last podcast. But because we're running a little bit short of time, I'm going to read what he has to say about his third one, which we've not talked about yet, and that's Intruder. And he says, yes, I know you may be a little bit surprised because his slasher movie is maybe not as good as the first two. However, I really like this film for its fun and entertaining values. This film never bores. The cast is more than likable, with a very short cameo by Bruce Campbell. The body count is good. The characters are killed in very different gory ways, and I mean really gory. Maybe the goriest slasher I've ever seen. Like that, I also like the very inventive camera shots, the telephone point of view shots, for instance, or the caddy point of view shots. I find them original and, well, unexpected, I must say. The setting is quite interesting because it gives a lot of possibilities, places to hide, lethal objects you can find there. Most of the characters are cool and fun to watch. This film is as fun as Cheerleader Camp, Friday 13th Part 6, and The Last Slumber Party. And that is a good thing because I like if I like serious slasher movies with a dark tone, I also like Mark Gorgonzola and Swiss Cheddar. So what do you guys think of Intruder, just very quickly?
Oh, I love Intruder.
Love it, love it.
I thought
it's great.
I do quite like it. I got the German DVD, and it's just been released on Blu-ray in the States, but unfortunately it is region coded, so I can't purchase it.
Got that for Christmas.
Did you get the version that has the free bonus DVD with it, or is there some kind of exclusive that was it was released as I don't think it was through Best Buy only or something like that.
We've ruined Nathan's Christmas now.
With a sort of an extended work print cut or something on it.
Ah!
Oh, no.
Sorry.
Moving swiftly on, Terry also says he is a fan of Uwe Boll. He doesn't say he's a fan of it, but Uwe Boll is the infamous German director of House of the Dead and Alone in the Dark. He asked if we'd seen the film Seed, which I've not seen. Have any of you guys seen it?
I haven't seen any of his films, I have to say.
No. I'm against Uwe Boll altogether.
He does. His reputation precedes him, doesn't it?
It does.
To say the very, very least. Well, thank you, Terry, for writing in. That is, it's always good to get some feedback. Have we got any more feedback from anyone else? Or is that our lot this time?
Eric?
I have nothing else, I'm afraid.
Okay.
No, I don't have anything.
I know. Yeah. Someone write to Nathan. Someone write to him, tell him why he didn't get the second disc of Intruder.
Ask why he likes Crazy Fat Ethel 2.
Because it's awesome.
I have two. One I will save for later because it's lengthy and I know Justin's pressed for time.
Yeah.
I'll save that for next show. So okay, apologies cool. to you who sent it. But I have a shorter one here. It's from Annette Sewell, a girl actually wrote in. Wow. Hey. Hello, Hysterians. I'm a recent convert to your podcast and have just finished up the Black Christmas episode. It was the perfect way to spend my Christmas evening, listening to a review of one of my favorite movies of all time. I attended a Black Christmas screening back in 2006 here in Los Angeles, where Bob Clark was present. According to him, Elvis Presley also loved the film so much that it became a tradition in the Presley household to watch it every Christmas. Keep up the good work, guys, and I will keep listening. Cheers, Annette.
Well, thank you, Annette. That's fascinating little tidbit, isn't it, really, that Elvis and Steve Martin loved Black Christmas.
Yeah, yeah. So,
Steve
yeah,
Martin great. Does.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. He said that was his favorite film, that because he was going to do, I think it was a play or a film with Olivia Hussey, and he said that his favorite role of hers, and she thought he was going to mention her in a play or an off-Broadway play, and he told her it was Black Christmas, that he'd loved that film, and he'd seen it like 14 times.
Celebrity
I mentioned that
base.
On the last show. Were you drunk?
Yeah,
no, but you know I can't remember anything from the last show.
Apparently so
just,
not.
Just to clarify, I don't listen back to the programs after we've recorded them. So you don't, in my
you're
defense,
one of those types.
In do you my remember, Eric, last time you said you were going to end the show by doing a tap dance to I'm Sending a Letter to Daddy?
Yeah, I do actually remember that, yes.
Okay, so are you going to sort of take us out with that?
That would be a no.
Or would you rather we play out with Jan Terry?
I'd rather you play out with Jan Terry, one of my favourite singers of all time.
Well, without further ado, thanks for listening.
Hold on.
Oh, so we got
one more thing.
Yes, go on.
I should probably give out the contact info.
Oh, yes, please do. Yeah, that's a good idea.
We do appreciate your feedback. Like I said, I have another one I'll save for the next show for now. But if you want to call us, leave us a voicemail. It's 858-233-9281. The email is the.hysteria.continues@gmail.com. Find us on Facebook by searching for The Hysteria Continues, and we're on Twitter. That's twitter.com/THC_podcast.
Brilliant. Okay. No, well, thank you very much, Joseph, and thank you, Nathan and Eric, for coming on again, as it were. next time, I think is it my turn to choose next time?
Or is yes, it is.
Sure is.
I've got a bit of a special one, I think, for next time. So we'll keep you in suspense. Thanks for joining us. And Jan, take it away.
be together.